Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow at DeborahLindsay.com. And remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to because tomorrow really matters. Spend your money in your community. And stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Wasting no time as the emotional high of victory slowly ebbs, President-elect Barack Obama is already getting to the task of naming those he wants in his inner circle. Party officials say he's offering the chief of staff job to fellow Chicagoan Rahm Emanuel.
I'm Steve Kathan in Chicago. If he becomes President-elect Obama's chief of staff, it'll be a return to the White House for Rahm Emanuel. Now an Illinois congressman, he was a policy advisor in Bill Clinton's first term. Some familiar names are surfacing as possibles for cabinet posts, but there may be nothing official on any of that for a while.
Professor Emeritus Charles Jones at the University of Wisconsin.
Appointing the right people to the right job is essential because you don't want to get to January 20th and find out that you put people where they don't belong.
Mr. Obama gets a big league dose of behind-the-scenes reality beginning tomorrow. It is said to be a sobering process for every new president.
The president starts each day with an intelligence briefing, and now Barack Obama will receive the same top-secret information, and he'll learn how it's acquired. Former CIA analyst Michael Scheuer, now at Georgetown University.
The world is a much more complicated place than he knew of while he was still running for office. The nature of these briefings are much more detailed, and I'm afraid much more ominous.
The president-elect will be briefed by the Director of National Intelligence and CIA officials on the world's troubles spots, from Afghanistan and Iraq to Iran and North Korea. Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
There are still four Senate races not yet estimated by CBS News. Director of Surveys Kathleen Frankovic on Minnesota.
There are just 525 votes separating the candidates. Al Franken, the Democrat, and Senator Coleman, the Republican. This race is so tight that there are likely to be challenges.
A recount likely, still counting in Georgia, Alaska, and Oregon. Most estimates say California voters have defined marriage constitutionally in traditional terms, though CBS News has not yet estimated those results.
We love each other. Our relationship is not with less than heterosexual relationships.
Robin Tyler and her partner, Diane Olson, were the first same-sex couple officially married in Los Angeles. They're now challenging the constitutionality of Prop 8, as are the ACLU, Lambda Legal, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights. L.A. City Attorney Rocky Delgadillo says he also plans to join the legal battle.
Our state constitution is designed to give people rights, not to take them away.
Claudia Pescuta, CBS News, Los Angeles.
On Wall Street, stocks had their worst post-election fall on record. The Dow lost 486 points. NASDAQ way off 98 points. Same for the S&P, down 53.
Senator Obama was given the presidency and not a magic wand. So people are waiting to see what kind of positions he formulates, and the markets are extraordinarily fragile.
UBS Financial's Art Cashin, oil today at about $65.50 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Smart is as smart invests. That's why the smart money is now in CDs, and there's no smarter CD than the one from GMAC Bank. Now get a 12-month CD at a 4.36 annual percentage yield. That's positively one of the best rates available. Show off your CD smarts. Grow your money while protecting it from market fluctuations. Go to gmacbank.com or call 1-866-246-BANK. Open a CD with as little as $500 and start reaping the benefits. GMAC Bank. Smart. Simple. Safe. Member FDIC.
I give my wife gold because I know that it makes her feel special.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry customer Larry Yone, talks about why only gold is treasured.
I can tell her that I love her, but when I give her that little box and she opens it up, actions speak louder than words.
From classic to contemporary, only Jared offers five times the selection of truly distinctive gold jewelry, with prices from under $50 to over $1,000.
It can only be Jared.
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com. Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
Author Michael Crichton has died. He wrote a long list of bestsellers, including one of the biggest, Jurassic Park, and also the movie.
We'll try to tempt the Rex now. Keep watching the fence.
Entertainment Tonight's Leonard Maltin.
Michael Crichton had a gift for coming up with great concepts and great story ideas, and the skill to then execute them, whether as a novelist or as a screenwriter, and sometimes as a director.
Michael Crichton was 66. In Tokyo, there's worry the election of Barack Obama may help Chicago's chances in a competitive bid for the 2016 Summer Olympics. The president of Kenya, so happy over the election of Barack Obama, he's declared a two-day national holiday. Obama's father was a native Kenyan. People were dancing in the streets in Kenya, singing, wrapping themselves in American flags. African leaders are also saying they expect more foreign aid money to flow. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Plenty of people would say P stands for Phoenix. They would only be partially right. With just two races left in the chase for the Sprint Cup, there's another P that's even more profound. Because this P takes both patience and perseverance. And if a driver can prevail, he will earn a place in racing history. At least a page or two. P stands for only one thing. Pure and simple, P is for pressure.
The chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup continues at Phoenix, Sunday at 3 Eastern on ABC.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
America moves left, or at least to the left of the far right.
It is useless to resist us.
Yes, we are irresistible. Ah, what a joy, what a relief. And a future we can look forward to, at least in some ways. An historic election has been completed in this country. Barack Obama certainly prevailed in the presidential race. Democrats picked up healthy seats in the House and at least 5 seats in the United States Senate, but 4 of those races, including Al Franken's squeaker in Minnesota, still too close to call. Oregon's Merkley-Brown race, still too close to call. And it's hard to believe that the Alaska race between Ted Stevens and Mayor Mark Begich is still out there. And I believe, last time I checked, Stevens had a slight edge over Mayor Begich. But bittersweet. Because here in California, Proposition 8 appears poised to pass. That is the ban on same-sex marriage, a rollback in constitutional rights. And ironically, it appears that the huge turnout among African Americans and Latinos in California for Barack Obama helped seal the passage of Proposition 8. We'll certainly be talking about those and other matters as the program rolls out today. Paul Waldman will join me in a moment from Media Matters. We'll talk about media coverage. Bruce Rayner will be here later this hour. He's the general president of the labor union called Unite Here. They represent hotel workers, retail clerks, and many people, hardworking Americans coast to coast. We're going to get their reaction to Obama's victory and what it means for working people. Next hour, well, the way I put it, the landslide covers massive vote problems, including, according to Greg Palast, as many as 50,000 voters who went to the polls in Georgia yesterday and couldn't vote. And that could be the margin of victory for Saxby Chambliss.
So we're going to talk to Rob Ritchie from fairvote.org next hour. Then we're going to get an update on the forgotten 51st state of occupied Iraq. Dar Jamil, the author of Beyond the Green Zone, will be joining us coming up a little bit later on in the program. And then we'll lead off the free speech zone today with California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. They picked up a couple of seats in the, I think one in the Senate and two in the Assembly. We'll get confirmation from the Lieutenant Governor a little bit later. But it probably won't affect the lame duck session that Governor Schwarzenegger is calling to try to deal with our latest budget problems. So we'll talk to John Garamendi about that again as we kick off our 5 o'clock free speech zone hour today on the Peter B. Collins Show. Well, it is time to roll out a little Edgar Winter music just one more time here for our friend Paul Waldman. Paul Waldman is co-author with David Brock of the book called Free Ride, John McCain and the Media. The free ride is over. The Straight Talk Express has crashed.
The mountain is high. The valley is low. And you're confused on which way to go. So I've come here to give you a hand and lead you into the promised land. Come on and take a free ride. Free ride. Come on and see your time to die. Come on and take a free ride.
Well, John McCain expected a much smoother ride from the media in this campaign season. Paul Waldman, what did he get for his trouble?
What did he get for his trouble?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't get the White House.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's an interesting question looking over the whole course of the campaign how John McCain did with the media. You know, he started off as the media's favorite politician. And it was the product of a really hard work that he had put in cultivating them over the period of about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And he did in many ways get a free ride, or at least maybe he rode for half price for a substantial part of the campaign. Then when we got to the general election, and there was actually some reasonable questions being asked of him, he began to get very surly with the press.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was in part because of all of the Bushies who were running his campaign, and that's kind of the way they operate, is they with overt hostility toward the media. And, you know, then we finally, you're now seeing a lot of conservatives saying, oh, you know, the media just gave this to him, to Obama. And I think it's partly because they've gotten to the point where they really can't accept any outcome that doesn't favor them as being legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never accepted that Bill Clinton was really a legitimate president, and I don't think they're going to accept that Barack Obama is a legitimate president. So that's part of it. And part of it, of course, is that they always complain about the media. You know, I think that those claims are really not to be taken seriously anymore. There's still a lot of things wrong with the press. I mean, already we're seeing, you know, you mentioned this being a center-left country. Already we're seeing lots and lots of these establishment commentators coming out and saying what they always say when Democrats win is, well, you know, this is still a center-right country, and they better not, you know, go too far too fast. They better not actually follow through on the things that they promised to do during the campaign because the public won't like that because this is such a conservative country. Well, you know, it kind of begs the question, what exactly does the public have to do to convince these people that they actually want some kind of progressive agenda enacted? I mean, what if the public did this? What if they elected a Democratic president with more votes than any other presidential candidate in American history had ever gotten? And what if they returned Democratic majorities to both the House and the Senate larger than they had been? And what if they told public opinion pollsters that they favored almost every item on the progressive agenda? What if they said the majorities of the public said that they want to retain Roe v. Wade, and they want aggressive environmental protections, and they want to get out of Iraq, and they want a foreign policy that's more based on diplomacy than on bellicose military action? And what if almost everything on the progressive agenda was favored by majorities of the public? If they did all that, would that be enough to convince these commentators that perhaps this is not so much a center-right country, but maybe it's a center-left country? Well, of course, they did all those things. And yet there are some people still saying that if Obama actually does the things that he said he was going to do that led to this victory, that, oh, he'll be punished because this is such a conservative country.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Paul, what you're pointing out is that the punditocracy is center-right or right-of-center for the most part.
There are very few hard lefties permitted in the corporate media. And so you get a range of views from the far right to the center right, with an occasional sprinkling of, you know, center left or people who are safe progressives. And so that really sets up this disconnect that those who are the commentators really are condescending to the public. And they assume that everybody is like them. And it's just anomalous or, you know, a momentary wobble that Obama won, and all the things that you articulated from the polls show the attitudes of American voters. The people who are paid $1 million plus to sit there on CNN or Fox News don't identify with working people and therefore don't think that those polls are really accurate.
Yeah, I think you have two things going on at the same time. You have, first of all, a continued dominance of conservative voices in, you know, what you might call the opinion sectors of the media. They dominate on talk radio. They, you know, despite the fact that there are now actually two progressives who have their own shows on cable television, they still have many more conservatives who have their own shows on cable television. And then alongside that kind of, you know, there are other elements to that, too. They dominate on the opinion pages. But alongside that, you have kind of an establishment centrist media who's, you know, the sort of David Broders of the world who, you know, who knows what they actually believe about issues. You know, I don't know what David Broder thinks about abortion. It doesn't really matter. But their impulses are always to scold Democrats to say that you're not being conservative enough.
Yeah.
And I think that they believe that out there in the heartland, which is a place that they don't actually have much familiarity with, it's the sort of imagined place in their minds,
right,
that out there the public is really conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Democrats can't possibly appeal to those people. They won't, you know, they won't vote for a Democrat, and they won't support a progressive agenda. And it's all based on this kind of imaginary heartland voter, you know, somebody like, say, Joe the Plumber, who, you know, is actually quite like the person that I think it lives in the minds of the David Broders of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that Joe the Plumber, despite the enthusiasm with which he was seized on by the McCain campaign, he really wasn't all that persuasive to the American public.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned David there, Broder from the Washington Post, but David Gergen also has a kind of revered spot in the pundit hierarchy. And we had some friends over last night to watch the returns, and they had chosen CNN before I got home, so we watched that for most of the evening. And Gergen really is their central eminent figure there. And on the one hand, I find him interesting and insightful, but I can't help feeling that he fits the mold of what you just described, where he feels his role is to keep Democrats from going too far. After all, his compass was set by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Gergen is kind of a unique character in that he worked for Ronald Reagan and for George H.W. Bush, but also worked for Bill Clinton. So he is sort of the prototypical centrist Washington insider. You know, there's nothing wrong with that when it's one person, but it's a problem when it sort of consumes the entire punditocracy, that sort of perspective. You know, within that kind of world, people who are strong conservatives are considered to be sort of part of the club. But people who are strong progressives are looked at as though they're some kind of alien who must by definition be out of touch with the American people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the results of last night's election should tell us that perhaps those progressive voices might actually be in touch with the American people.
But then we wouldn't allow our policies and our ideas to be brokered by these high-paid commentators who are supposed to tell us what we think, Paul.
Well, there you go.
We're going to take a break and return. Paul Waldman with us from Media Matters. Visit their website and see how the media performed on election night. Their web address is mediamatters.org. And as I was watching on CNN, all the pundits were lined up behind their laptops, and I just imagine that Bill Bennett was playing blackjack on his. Can't prove it, just my imagination running wild. We'll continue with Paul Waldman. If you want to join us with a comment, you're welcome to do so at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests, and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens, which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Want to save money, have fun, and walk a little lighter on the planet? Listen to Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., right here on KRXA 540 AM. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, as we bring in the experts to discuss how to cut energy costs, how to build community, and how to lower our ecological footprints. It's good for our pocketbooks, and it's good for the planet. And we have to, because tomorrow really does matter.
On the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm still waiting for the announcement of Governor Sarah Palin's first news conference of the presidential campaign. I mean, Wasilla would be a great place for it. We continue with Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org. And, Paul, that was one of the things where I feel the strategy of the McCain campaign really did work. They got their way, starting with Rudy Giuliani and Sarah Palin at the convention, demonizing the so-called liberal media. And then when the media reported critically on Sarah Palin, and there was a lot to look at critically, they all said, oh, it's unfair, it's liberal media bias, etc. But they did manage to hide that candidate from the media throughout the campaign with just a few of those key interviews with Sean Hannity, Charlie Gibson, and Katie Couric.
Yeah, well, it's one of the interesting stories. You're remembering correctly, on the night that Sarah Palin gave her speech, every single one of the major speakers from the podium, and that included Rudy Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney, and then Palin herself, all included attacks on the media in their speech. What actually happened was for the next few weeks, the coverage of Sarah Palin was extraordinarily positive. It was all about how she was drawing these big crowds, and wasn't she kind of the exciting new thing? And then as people started to get to know her a little, and as she did a few interviews, they were really disastrous. And the campaign kind of cut her off from any sort of access to the press. And what initially looked like a brilliant move on the McCain campaign's part ended up being a real liability. And I think in the end, it probably hurt them that they kept her so far away from the press, because you know, it's going to be hard for them to take you seriously if you won't answer any questions. And every time she did, you know, after a long period of not giving any access, come out and give an interview, it turned out to be a disaster. And maybe if she had done more of them, she wouldn't have performed so poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Paul, you know, as I look back at the coverage of this campaign, my biggest gripe is that the corporate media has never been willing to call a lie, to call a smear, to really describe honestly the origins of some of the crap that they paraded on television as allegedly part of the campaign coverage. And there I'm thinking of Reverend Wright and these ancient videotapes that were trotted out and the Bill Ayers story. And so how do we learn from this, and how do we try to train the media for the future that we really want the truth, we want critical reporting, we want clear investigative journalism, and not simply, you know, stenography or the delivery of prepackaged news or propaganda?
Well, this may surprise you, given the fact that for a few years now we've been talking all about the media's various misdeeds, but I'm going to try to look at the cup as half full for the moment.
Okay.
I think that things did improve somewhat in this campaign. We have, and Media Matters, we are certainly trying to cultivate this as much as possible. I think we're moving toward more of a culture of accountability than we've had in the past. You know, you had organizations like Fact Check and PolitiFact that were doing a lot of fact checking and were relied on by other by news organizations. We obviously at Media Matters have been very aggressive about trying to get the media to fact check more aggressively, and as you say, to call a lie a lie. And I think that there you're beginning to see some glimmers of hope on that score, that it can be harder in today's media age than it was in the past to deceive the public for a lengthy amount of time and get away with lying over and over. Now, you know, there's that old expression that a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth can get its boots on. Well, that's even more true today than it was in the past. But it's also true that the truth can be trailing close behind. And, you know, every campaign provides a slightly different context based on what the candidates themselves are going to do. You know, one of the things we saw that we tried to draw attention to was this strange thing where ordinarily if a candidate says something that's false and the press actually calls them out on it and says, you know, you've been saying this thing and it's just not true, and they put that in print or put it on television, the candidate will become somewhat chastened and stop saying it. But the McCain campaign actually didn't in a lot of cases. I mean, it took weeks for Sarah Palin to stop coming out and saying, I said thanks but no thanks to the Bridge to Nowhere,
right,
when that was just a complete lie. And it got corrected over and over again by journalists. They would quote it and say, and this in fact is not true. And yet she kept on saying it, sort of shamelessly. So I think there were times like that when the press was actually doing its job, but in some ways it didn't penetrate because the McCain campaign in particular was just so willing to not tell the truth. This was true in particular of their ads. I mean, I don't know if there may have been an advertising campaign by a candidate that was dirtier, but I don't know that there was one that was more dishonest than the ones that McCain ran. I mean, every single one practically, I would say probably at least 75% of the ads that McCain ran contained major falsehoods that had already been debunked, but yet they continued to run these ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only punish a candidate so much. I think if you have asked journalists, they would probably say, well, you know, we did correct those things. But they kept saying them anyway.
Right.
So I think that there has been some progress and that reporters are more attuned to it now. I know that I've talked to a lot of reporters who think, and specifically with regard to Media Matters, that they feel like we perform a good service by doing all the fact-checking that we do. Even though they feel somewhat under siege sometimes, they also feel that they value what we do.
Paul Waldman.
So I think that things are getting better.
Thank you very much.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. Senator Barack Obama now has what he has been working for the last 2 years. He's president-elect. Now what?
This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice.
John Kennedy once said that he'd always dreamed of all the power a president has and all he could do. But as soon as he became president, he realized the limits of power and all he couldn't do.
The problems that are facing the country are enormous, and I think that's going to be Obama's challenge.
Von Verbers of CBSNews.com.
He made an awful lot of promises during this campaign. Those are not necessarily going to square with the reality. And the expectations now are very high for Barack Obama. So he's going to have all of that support from Republicans and independents and Democrats if he wants to get some of this stuff done.
More after this.
Most weekends, going to the mall could help you change your wardrobe or home for the better. But this weekend, it could change your whole life. Because this weekend, you can experience a major breakthrough in sleep technology. The Sleep Number Bed, an innovative revolution in comfort that can offer no less than a wonderful night's sleep for an individual or a couple, simply because you control your total comfort. Everyone can discover their sleep number at a select comfort store. It's fast, fun, and free. Visit us this weekend to discover your sleep number on our newest, most advanced sleep systems with temperature control materials. What can happen when you find that number? Well, among other things, a better night's sleep. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts.
Now through November 11th, save $500 on selected special edition bed sets. Queen sets only $13.99 while supplies last. Or get interest-free financing until 2010 with approval on all beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you.
Having lost the presidency and seats in both houses of Congress, what does the Republican Party do now? Again, Von Verbers.
Republicans were just caught in a bad situation all the way around. The tide was against them. They probably are going to get back to some more of their fundamental beliefs, which is smaller government, lower taxes. They didn't behave that way when they were in office for 8 years, and that's come back to really bite them.
Big time, says political science professor Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia.
The Republican Party house has just burned to the ground. There's nothing left. They lost the presidency. They are now irrelevant virtually in Congress. They have lost everything that mattered. So the GOP has a number of years, probably quite a few, in the wilderness.
The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s of these programs can be found at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Live.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The long, dark night of the rule of Bush and Cheney. Well, the end is in sight, friend.
George is in the jungle, knocking on the door. Come to get your children, want to have a war. Come on. Lord, you better run. It's a long, dark night before this thing is done. Brown is in the outhouse, Katrina on the line. So
John Fogerty, once upon a time, he was the front man for Creedence Clearwater Revival, and that's a powerful political protest song he released last year. Bruce Rayner joins me now. He's general president of the only labor union with an exclamation point in its name, Unite Here. Hello, Bruce.
How are you doing?
Good to talk to you again.
Great night.
Yeah, it certainly was. At what point did you kind of let go and say, all right, this one is in the bag?
Well, I was in Chicago, and with leaders of the SEIU and the food and commercial workers and some of the laborers and the Teamsters, and my point in the process where I felt I could stop holding my breath was when it was clear Virginia was in our column, because having spent 20 years in the South, I know if we could. Not only from an electoral standpoint, but when we won Virginia, I knew it was a landslide.
Yeah, yeah. And it really was powerful, Bruce. Here on the West Coast, we're used to watching returns late into the night or even into a week or two after election night. And so I was pleasantly surprised, and I was a little skeptical when the networks called Ohio in the 7 o'clock Pacific time hour on only 16% of the vote. Because I know I grew up in Ohio and I believe that Kerry was robbed in Ohio in 2004, I was very concerned that things would flip and that the exit polls wouldn't hold and that we might have another imbroglio in Ohio this year. I was happy to be wrong about that. But again, when the networks first called Ohio, I was a little skeptical there and I said, they're really rushing this along.
Yeah, well, that wasn't my worry was more that anything could go wrong. We could lose a state we're supposed to win. They could turn out that they left 40,000 black voters online somewhere. I mean, so knowing the opponents you have, it's like I've run union organizing campaigns against hostile textile companies in the South, and any way they can steal it up until the ballots are counted, even after they're counted and recorded, you worry about them stealing it.
So, well, next hour we're going to talk about some of the problems that occurred that, while a landslide does tend to bury them, I'm not willing to leave it there, Bruce, because we have a report that as many as 50,000 voters were blocked from voting in Georgia, and Saxby Chambliss won that Senate race by a very narrow margin, and so I'm not going to sit still and just accept that because the top of the ticket did really well and overcame the margin of graft, that we won't take a hard look at every one of these races and make sure that every vote was counted.
Oh, I can't, Peter, I can't agree with you more. In fact, Georgia, I think, has the most barbaric election laws specifically designed to disenfranchise poor people who vote.
Yeah. Bruce Rayner, as the head of a union with 500,000 people, and you just cited your own background in organizing people, how high a grade can you give Barack Obama and his campaign for the discipline that they showed over the last year and a half, and in particular during the general election phase here since the convention, how they organized their ground game and using Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, they went poaching in states that were blood red just 4 years ago.
Oh, it's an amazing spectacle. I think Obama and his people have rewritten political campaigns in this country in the way that Karl Rove did with the evil empire of Bush. Mm-hmm. In Bush's first election, they rewrote the campaign rules. And what they did is not only a large field operation in every single state during the primary, but I watched in the primaries, they took a step up in the general election, a gigantic neighborhood block-by-block volunteer program led by lots of fairly low-paid staff people. And lots of offices in these states, 3 and 4 times the numbers of offices. They really sunk their roots into the communities. And mm-hmm. that had a lot to do with the large turnout and the turnout of Obama voters. The other thing I saw, and this is a masterful organizational job that they did in all these states. And the thing that's most remarkable to me is how they really adjusted their strategy by a state. So, for instance, you take a state like Montana, small population, a reliably Republican state. They went and made the Republicans fight for Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no black people my son is black. He says no black person ever even visited Montana, let alone lived there. So you have none of the natural base for Barack Obama. And yet they go in, they build an organization, they run a campaign without a lot of appearances. But the largest crowd drawn in Montana, I think ever, was drawn by Barack Obama in one of his visits there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that in a masterful way with an entirely rural white population. Then you compare it to the job they did in North Carolina, where there's a 20+% black voting population, that they turn out in record numbers with, 95+ reliability. At the same time, they run a campaign that appeals to white voters, and while they don't get a majority of white voters, they get enough white voters to carry the state. So their strategy and their tactics and their organization were remarkable. These people deserve tremendous, tremendous credit. Of course, the candidate does as well, and mm-hmm. I think we can also give some credit to President Bush. He certainly had his contribution.
Well, Dick Cheney was in there helping.
He did. I'm sorry. We always have to remember.
The last minute endorsement.
Cheney deserves to be commended for being an evil bastard.
Well, and when he endorsed McCain, you just have to imagine the reaction at the McCain campaign. Didn't we tell him to shut up? I mean, is he going rogue with Sarah Palin, for God's sake?
That guy is too much. I'm almost sorry. I'm not sorry to see him out of power, but you want to make sure he stays in public life because I think it'll weaken his party as long as he's still around.
Interesting point. Bruce Rayner with us, the general president of Unite Here, the labor union that represents 500,000 workers in America in various trades like the hospitality industry, hospitals, gaming, apparel, textile, retail, distribution, laundry, and other hardworking jobs. And Bruce, I want to turn for a moment to the McCain campaign. And I wonder if you recall that odd situation at Saddleback Church when Rick Warren asked McCain a question about, I believe it was about the detainees and the treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo. And he turned around and answered the question by saying that he wanted to make sure that everybody had a right to a secret ballot in labor elections. Do you remember that?
I do.
And so here he was interjecting the Employee Free Choice Act, which is a top issue for organized labor in this country, and characterizing it and, putting it in the wrong context. But this was a point that he made that Sarah Palin interjected at inappropriate times when she made a few public appearances, like at the debate. And so I'm just curious what your polling shows about attitudes toward card checks versus secret ballots in union elections. And does the average voter have any idea of what the Republicans were talking about?
Well, first of all, the Republicans tried to make the issue of how workers choose a union and portray the organized labor and unions as being undemocratic because we want to end this the current procedure. They tried to use it in Senate races. I think there were 9 or 10 Senate races where they raised money from these right-to-work type groups and very companies like Cintas and Walmart and Smithfield Foods, who fight unions in their own workplaces, to do these ads to discredit Senate candidates. So this was part of the Republican plan. It didn't go very far in any of those states. It proved not very effective. And I think what happened with poor McCain is actually McCain's very anti-union. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't know much about it. Of course, it doesn't stop him. But so I think what happened is somebody, they told him, get it in, just find a spot for it. So they asked him about Guantanamo. You know, it might have come when they asked him, you know, where he bought his clothes. He might have said, oh, yeah, well, we got to stop unions from...
Right. How many houses do you have? Well, when we stop unions, I'll have a chance to count.
That's right. You know, but the bottom line is that this is an amazing issue because all our polling shows, and not just ours, but polls conducted by professional pollsters, that of the millions and millions of non-union workers working at offices and stores and factories and distribution centers and hotels and hospitals and nursing homes, well, 55-60% of them would choose a union in a heartbeat if they had the chance, and that they would join a union and a union would help them on the job. So overwhelming, these are non-union workers. I'm not talking about the 15 million union members in America. I'm talking about the non-union, people who work at non-union jobs. So the issue isn't whether workers want union. The issue in the Employee Free Choice Act, which I think will become one of the central pieces of the economic recovery plan for this country, is going to be about do workers share, the American workers stay in the middle class, or all the jobs that we've created, the service sector jobs, a woman who takes care of people in a nursing home or a waitress or a hotel housekeeper or a laundry worker, do they get a right to a middle-class job, or do those jobs have to be, by definition, poverty-level jobs with no benefits? That's going to be one of the central issues, and the only way those workers have of getting wages and benefits that get them into the middle class is by negotiating them. You can't negotiate without a union. The workers understand that because they don't have any power without having a collective voice. So the issue is really going to be part of the recovery program, not for Wall Street, but for Main Street, that says workers need to be able to join unions freely and fairly. Because right now, basically, if a company does not want a union, the government's NLRB so-called election process means that the workers will never get a union if the company doesn't want them to have one. They can vote for it any amount of times they want. They never get a union, and unions understand that, and workers understand that. So I think it's something that's going to be a central issue as we go forward, but I don't think that the Republicans have gotten much mileage so far, even though they spent millions of dollars doing it.
Bruce,
the Colorado Right to Work initiative failed by a substantial margin.
Interesting. Now, what would be your top three issues for an agenda, a labor agenda for President Obama?
Boy, doesn't that sound nice, President Obama? I'd just like to say it again. I just want to hear it.
President Obama.
Oh, man. You know, a labor, what we care about in organized labor is the problems of working families. And first and foremost is American workers need better pay and benefits. They already work hard, and there's no issue about how hard they're working or how productive they are. But in the last, in American workers earn today with the same real wages they earned in 1979, meaning they can what they can buy with their paycheck. So American workers need a raise. The only way to do that is going to be to reestablish workers' right to organize unions again. So the first goal is the Employee Free Choice Act, which we think would elevate the standard of living of millions of American workers. That's the first thing. The second top priority we would have would be health care for the 48 million Americans that have no health insurance,
mm-hmm.
and another 15 or 20 million that are underinsured, that don't have the adequate insurance.
And, Bruce, that's what I'd like to see us give in place of a bailout for Detroit. If Detroit had national health care, their costs and their competitiveness would change sharply.
Absolutely. I think I would agree with you. Then I guess the other thing that I think that would affect American workers dramatically is immigration reform. Let's give immigrant workers who we need in this country a path to citizenship, and let's decriminalize immigrant workers and give them the right to stay here without harassment, and
Bruce,
the right not to be exploited by employers.
Bruce, I'm sorry. We only offer amnesty to telephone companies that have tapped Americans illegally.
You know, it's our double standards are amazing.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't believe that it's amnesty to offer non-citizens a path to legal residency and citizenship. I just had to interject that because I couldn't resist. Bruce, we're going to take a break and return. Bruce Rayner is with us from Unite Here, the labor union that represents about 500,000 Americans. And if you have a question or comment, or if you're a member of a labor union and you want to chime in, we'd love to hear from you. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And if you want to just call up and on the air say President Obama because it feels real good, go ahead. I'll indulge you.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
It's time for the 9th International Film Festival presented by the local United Nations Association with 14 excellent international documentary films, again at the gorgeous Golden State Theater in Monterey. There will be four film sessions, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, November 13, 14, and 15 at 7 p.m., and Sunday afternoon, November 16 at 2 p.m. Admission is just $5 per day with free entry for full-time students. These outstanding films concern global issues like human rights, the environment, impacts of globalization, and security. From 15 to 90 minutes long and deal with countries and cultures as diverse as China, India, Bangladesh, New Guinea, Russia, Palestine, Argentina, and the U.S. Feature films include new documentaries, One Water, Stealing America Vote by Vote, The Judge and the General about Pinochet of Chile, and Fire Under the Snow about human rights in Tibet. That's November 13 to 16th. At the Golden State. More at unamontereybay.org.
Want to meet a healthcare provider that will give you the time to talk about your health issues and actually listen to you? Are you looking for an alternative to the pill-popping culture created by the megaceutical companies? Do you have chronic pain, headaches, depression, allergies, or any other unresolved health concerns? Give Optimal Health a try. Hi, I'm Glenn Sadowski, licensed acupuncturist at Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey at 655-3208. I'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in downtown Carmel on the first and third Sundays of each month. Reserve your space for an absolutely free 20-minute health evaluation, a wonderful opportunity to make an informed decision on your well-being. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture at 655-3208 today. Times are limited. Optimal Health, where you receive good medicine with great results. Our number again is 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
And her name's Elaine Chao.
Better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shut it. I ain't working here no more.
That's the
late, not-so-great Johnny Paycheck and take this job and shove it. We're talking with Bruce Rayner. He's the national president. They call him general president of Unite Here. Their website for the labor organization is unitehere.org. Bruce and I met at the Democratic National Convention in Denver earlier this year, and I'm delighted to talk with you again, Bruce.
Good to be with you, Peter.
I wanted to ask you, I referenced Elaine Chao. She's the wife of Senator Mitch McConnell and has been an awful Secretary of Labor. She sent out memos to employers about ways that they can prevent their employees from earning overtime, and also made huge demands for ridiculous document requests for the expenses of, I used to be a national board member of my labor union, and they made these incredible requirements for expense reports and things like that. And so we get rid of her, and I imagine Barack Obama will put a good pro-labor person in as Secretary of Labor. And
I
also
certainly hope so.
Also a fair and balanced panel at the National Labor Relations Board. What else do we need to fix as we say goodbye to the Bush-Cheney wrecking crew as they leave Washington?
Well, we're going to need to undo many of these ridiculous regulations. You referenced some, but it's there are so many regulations which basically allow employers to exploit workers. We've got to undo many of the OSHA so-called regulations. They basically said to employers, take care of, regulate yourselves. And, of course, it's not shockingly, the American workplace has become more unsafe any time in the past 30 years. So we're going to have to...
Well, it worked on Wall Street.
They certainly deregulated Wall Street, and they followed through in the workplace. The problem is, the victims at the workplace were workers. The victims at Wall Street were all of us. And so these guys, we've got to redo all those OSHA regulations. The standards have been set too low, so employers, workers' health is jeopardized.
Mm-hmm.
We've got government practices where they outlawed project labor agreements for the building trades, which guaranteed that construction workers would get prevailing wages and benefits. All those things have to be redone. We need to say goodbye to these incompetent people they've had in the Department of Labor and a bunch of federal agencies. So President Obama, which I have to admit I love the sound of, maybe it'll take me a while to quit being thrilled every time I hear it, so I'm going to say it if you don't mind, Peter.
Go ahead.
You know, when the president starts appointing people to these positions, it's going to go way beyond the traditional, like the NLRB and the Labor Department. I mean, workers care who's in the SEC, because part of the reason we had this financial meltdown, which hurt millions of American workers' pensions, has been because the SEC wasn't watching the store. So it's who the president appoints to the SEC, who
and not
in charge
one,
of economic policy.
There isn't a seat for a labor representative on the bailout oversight board, and
there
I think there should be.
But I do think you're going to see working people represented in the Obama administration at every level. I don't think it's just, you know, that people tend to focus on who the Secretary of Labor is or who the NLRB appointments are, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
But we need people at all levels of government, in all departments. You know, the federal government indirectly employs 10 million Americans, private sector Americans, because they contract with private organizations. Well, should the taxpayers contract with an employer who then turns around and doesn't provide health insurance for that worker, and then that worker is forced to go where to get health insurance?
Yeah.
To the federal government. So it's a system that's broken. So the federal government needs to use its power of procurement. That's another thing that we expect, you know, the new administration to do. You know, in the
now, Bruce, let me jump in because I just
sure.
have about a minute and a half remaining, and I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the internal struggles in the labor movement. Andy Stern has become a bit of a controversial figure at SEIU, particularly in the way he's competing with nurses for health care contracts here in California. And I want to ask just a kind of a big picture question of you, and that is at Unite Here, are you still giving the most weight to actual members of a local bargaining union at contract time, or are you nationalizing the contract negotiations in some of the patterns that we see in SEIU?
Well, the answer, unfortunately, Peter, is as always much more complicated than simple. You know, in dealing with national companies, You clearly have to nationalize the negotiations. What we did in our hotel industry bargaining in 2004-2006 is we coordinated the bargaining between mm-hmm. locals of the same giant hotel companies
yeah.
in order to get workers to have the power to not only support the workers who were at the bargaining table,
right.
but support most workers who are not at the bargaining table.
But do we pay a price in worker involvement and worker democracy?
Well, I don't think so, because what we do is the way our union, and I believe strongly the way SEIU does it, is that workers are involved in those decisions, and workers are educated as to what the fight is about and buy into it. Because,
mm-hmm.
look, workers understand better than anybody else that when you're dealing with a company that's 90% non-union, and you're only 10% of that company, whether it's a hospital or a hotel or a food service company, that for you to have any power, you've got to get some of those non-union workers in your camp.
Bruce, I'm out of time. Great to talk with you, and we'll do it again. Bruce Rayner.
Absolutely, Peter.
General President of Unite Here. Say it again, President Obama.
President Obama. It's a great day, Peter.
We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing, taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time. It's all done online. And it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation. That's 702-299-5789. Or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Now, the hard part.
President-elect Obama is shifting from campaign mode to transition mode.
The stock market takes a post-election dive.
We basically woke up this morning with the same old problems.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Barack Obama took it easy on the morning after his victory. He had a leisurely breakfast with his wife and daughters, then went to the gym. But behind the scenes, work is already underway on the transition from candidate to president in less than 3 months.
I'm Steve Kathan in Chicago. Can the new president-elect fix the economy?
I don't think that anybody's going to fix the economy. I think we're going to go through tough times.
Even diehard Obama supporters have their doubts during election night euphoria. The feeling is the president-elect will move fast to name key economic people to ease Main Street and Wall Street.
Mentioned as possible candidates for Treasury Secretary are Lawrence Summers, who held the job in the Clinton administration, Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich, former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, and New Jersey Governor John Corzine, who was Hank Paulson's predecessor as head of Goldman Sachs.
The urgency of the situation requires that we have a functioning government on January 20th.
William Galston of the Brookings Institute was President Clinton's domestic policy advisor. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the story at the White House.
While promising complete cooperation with Barack Obama during the transition, President Bush made it clear there'll only be one man in charge for the next 76 days, and that's him.
There's important work to do in the months ahead, and I will continue to conduct the people's business as long as this office remains in my trust.
But he promised to keep Mr. Obama fully informed about important decisions and said he was certain that his commitment to national security will remain steadfast under the next commander-in-chief. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Starting tomorrow, Mr. Obama will get the same intelligence briefing the president gets every morning. Former CIA analyst Michael Scheuer says Obama will learn a lot more than he knows now.
The world is a much more complicated place than he knew of while he was still running for office. The nature of these briefings are much more detailed and, I'm afraid, much more ominous.
Now this.
I'm Maria. I own Maria's Hair and Beauty Salon. Last year, I was neck-deep in invoices and receipts, so my friend suggested Intuit QuickBooks. I'm usually not that good with computer software, but she said I could try it online for free. So I did. And QuickBooks is great. So easy to use. Saves me hours tracking expenses. Now I can spend more time convincing my customers not to get that new style that only looks good on supermodels and poodles.
Intuit QuickBooks. Get back to business. Try it for free at QuickBooks.com.
Today, let's talk about commuting. You think yours is tough? Fact is, our cars and trucks just got to take it. That's why right now there's Good Wrench and Go Time to help your Chevy continue to take it. Just go back to your participating Chevy dealer and head down their Good Wrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection. With fuel prices the way they are, taking proper care of your Chevy can help you get more out of every mile. Good Wrench and Go. We're keeping it simple. Offer ends November 30th.
The stock market's Election Day euphoria evaporated today. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus watched the Dow lose 486 points.
Stocks had run up ahead of the election. They had already built in an Obama victory based on the polls. And so when the victory came to pass, they decided to sell on the news. And so we're seeing some profit taking.
Art Cashin is head of trading floor operations for UBS Financial.
Senator Obama was given the presidency and not a magic wand. So people are waiting to see what kind of positions he formulates, and the markets are extraordinarily fragile.
The Dow closed at 91.39. The NASDAQ dropped 98 points. Democrats tightened their grip on Congress yesterday, but some races are still too close to call. There will be a recount of the Minnesota Senate race. Unofficially, Republican incumbent Norm Coleman leads Democratic challenger Al Franken by just 475 votes. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports Democratic leaders have renewed their push for another economic stimulus package.
Acknowledging an enlarged majority with a Democratic president gives her party more responsibility to deliver. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the first priority is to boost the economy with a bill to create some public works jobs and help those most in need.
Extending unemployment insurance to understand that people are hungry in America and provide additional emergency food assistance.
Pelosi says she hopes President Bush and Republicans will cooperate to pass such a bill in a lame duck session of Congress, but otherwise it will have to wait until January. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
California's decision on gay marriage remains inconclusive, with votes still being counted, but some county clerks have ordered a halt to same-sex marriages until the outcome is certain. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Smart is as smart invests. That's why the smart money is now in CDs, and there's no smarter CD than the one from GMAC Bank. Now get a 12-month CD at a 4.36 annual percentage yield. That's positively one of the best rates available. Show off your CD smarts. Grow your money while protecting it from market fluctuations. Go to GMACBank.com or call 1-866-246-BANK. Open a CD with as little as $500 and start reaping the benefits. GMAC Bank. Smart, simple, safe. Member FDIC.
I give my wife gold because I know that it makes her feel special.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry customer Larry Young, talks about why only gold is treasured.
I can tell her that I love her, but when I give her that little box and she opens it up, actions speak louder than words.
From classic to contemporary, only Jared offers five times the selection of truly distinctive gold jewelry, with prices from under $50 to over $1,000.
It can only be Jared.
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com. Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And don't let the Obama landslide and the beautiful rubble it's left obscure the efforts, mostly by Republicans, to manipulate and steal our elections.
So you think this machine is democratic, all slick and clean and automatic, a paperless process right there on the touchscreen. But you never hear the tabulator tweaking late at night after you was all sleeping. A wham bam scam and the program flips it for McCain. No way.
Happened to Oprah.
Make the connection, 'cause I ain't gonna let them steal the election.
And here on November 5th, there is a nationwide effort underway, a series of election assemblies, including one in Oakland at 5:30 Pacific time and one in San Francisco that's scheduled to get underway at 6 o'clock. There's one underway across from the White House in Lafayette Park. We have a call in to someone who is attending that, and if she responds, we'll get a live report from the scene in this half hour. Joining me now is Rob Ritchie. He's the executive director of Fair Vote, their website, fairvote.org, and he's co-author of Every Vote Equal and Whose Votes Count. Rob, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, a lot of people are still giddy. They're taking victory laps and don't want to, you know, be burdened with any what they would consider to be negativity. But I take the position that while I'm delighted that Barack Obama won and I'm pleased that Democrats increased their majorities in the House and the Senate, we cannot have confidence in the process that delivered those results yesterday, and my hunch is that more Democrats won, and that in particular Saxby Chambliss in Georgia did not win. And these are issues that we have to grapple with, because in the past we've seen the Democrats really reluctant to dig in and fight over the election processes themselves.
Well, I think Saxby Chambliss has been thrown into a runoff, so he hasn't actually won yet. They have an interesting law there in Georgia that if you don't win a majority of the vote, you haven't won yet. And so they are, I think the latest numbers show him being thrown into a runoff. I haven't double-checked in the last few hours, but that seemed to be the case. We work in an electoral regime in which we have built this whole voting process on a very weak foundation that is rooted in an approach to the right to vote which was let's protect it at the local level, let's have different jurisdictions make their own decisions, let's not really fund it, it's time in the 21st century, I think, to say, well, look, we value democracy and we need to value the right to vote, and there's just a whole host of changes that need to be done. And within the current climate, it's all too possible to have a lot of corruption, a lot of outright stealing, and a lot of things going on. And I think one of our real promises that we can do in the wake of what has been a very high turnout election and a new spirit about voting that we're seeing this year that, you know, started in the primaries and has extended into the general election is, well, let's take it seriously. And I think we, in the next Congress, could actually see some serious action, at least potentially, if people are active and don't get complacent because, like, oh, well, I think, you know, there was no real issues here. But, of course, there were issues, and there always are, if we, you know, don't take these steps to move into the 21st century.
Rob, what level of confidence do you have in the we'll just focus on the federal level, okay, House, Senate, and President. What level of confidence do you have in the integrity of the process that most Americans went through yesterday?
Well, I think there's different ways to measure it. I mean, I think that there's a whole lot of well, here's two things that are definitely going on. Is one is there's a lot of disenfranchisement that happens from just being inefficient and poorly organized and poorly funded elections. You know, and one simple measure of that is long lines, right? You know, it's just like and long lines in one jurisdiction and then short lines right near them. In fact, just here in Maryland, which, you know, wasn't a battleground state, so no one's really caring about it, but you know, a classic thing which we sort of double checked to see if it had been fixed from 2006, and it hadn't, is that where the students vote, they had 2 or 3 hour lines, and in the same neighborhood where the non-students vote, they could walk in and vote and leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was the problem in 2006, and they didn't fix it in 2008. And, you know, and some of that is just sort of inefficiency and bureaucratic problems. And then some of that is like, well, we don't really like students voting, and so there, you know, there can be a more kind of intentional part of it. The other kind of intentional thing that is definitely going on is efforts to keep people from voting with, you know, kind of targeted tactics. And one you know, classic example is this idea of voter caging,
mm-hmm.
where postcards are sent by supporters of one side, typically supporters of Republicans, you know, sent to only certain kinds of prospective voters, based on the expectation that they're Democratic leaning, and if those postcards come back as, you know, for a rejected mail, then they try to challenge people who try to vote from that address. But sometimes it could be, you know, wrong challenges, or it can be actually intimidating, and there's a lot of problems with that process. So these sort of acts of trying to shift the vote and keep some people from voting, you definitely see that as well. So we know those are going on. There's sort of greater potential that people are concerned about, which is the idea of actually sort of manipulating computer codes and, you know, sort of whole massive shifts of election.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's happening or not, the very fact that it could be happening and the very fact that people can even be having this conversation is ridiculous, in the sense that we just shouldn't be having this conversation. And one way we can is that we have, you know, private vendors who are, you know, for-profit companies that are running these elections, sort of outsource democracy to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we don't own the equipment. One state does, Oklahoma. They actually, you know, bought their optical scan equipment years ago. They know what the software is. It's part of a public process, you know, process where, you know, one side doesn't have access to it and the other. And it's, you know, there's sort of no questions about, how they're running their elections. You know, it's something that we definitely could do, but only one state has.
And so, overall, you can't say that we have total confidence in the process that led to these electoral results that we have so far.
Well, no. I mean, not to the degree that we obviously want to. You know, I don't have any evidence of sort of particular races being shifted. And I should say that the focus of our organization, there are some folks who are really focused on these issues, and I don't want to sort of step into their terrain because this is something that they're working on. We're trying to change some of our fundamental policies governing elections. Like, we want to get rid of the electoral college system. We want to go to proportional representation instead of winner-take-all, and instant runoff instead of single-member, plurality voting, and universal voter registration instead of the kind of registration policy. So we're focused on some policy changes, but there obviously are groups doing, I think, terrific, heroic work in trying to protect the right to vote within the current rules we have.
Yeah, I want to direct people to the website nomorestolenelections.org. They're the organizers of this November 5th series of assemblies across the country. And you can get information there on some of these rallies or gatherings that are taking place. And also on the homepage, there's an article that was posted by John Nichols, our friend and colleague who writes for The Nation magazine. And he takes the story of actor Tim Robbins. And Robbins appeared on Bill Maher's HBO show a few weeks back, and Nichols quotes something that I recall seeing Tim Robbins say, and it seemed a little out of context at the time, but he just felt he really had to communicate this to people. He said, "Refuse provisional ballots. They're throwing those out. They can throw those out. That's your last resort. Take it, but fight in the polling place to vote. It's your right as an American. You have every right to vote if you're registered. And if you're not on the rolls and something went wrong, document it. Video cameras at polls are going to be an effective way to fight this election day." Well, when Tim Robbins went to vote in the Chelsea section of New York on Tuesday, his name was not on the list of registered voters, even though he's been voting in the same place for more than 10 years. He voted in the primary earlier this year. And so it took him 5 hours. He went to an election judge downtown. They found his name on the rolls. They reinstated him. And then he went back to his polling place to vote. Now, that plus the Oprah Winfrey case are two high-profile examples of people who encountered these kinds of problems as they attempted to vote this year. And, Rob Ritchie, what do you see as the awareness level of the Democratic Party about the real risks and vulnerabilities that these two examples offer us?
Well, I think that there are certainly some Democrats that are well aware of it. I mean, Congressman Conyers from Michigan did a lot of research into the 2004 elections in Ohio and issued a report. And, you know, and it certainly is an issue that, you know, some folks are focused on.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We're going to take a break and return, and then I want to talk with you about some of the policy positions that you're promoting, Rob Ritchie, like instant runoff voting. We have it in some communities here in California, and there are some other ways, including elimination of the Electoral College, that I think could really change the process and bring it up to date. We'll take a break and return. Rob Ritchie with us from fairvote.org. And if you have a question or comment, bring it on now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. 573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Nick Tanum is taking your calls today. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Salinas on Davis Road at West Acacia Street, there is a traffic hazard. A CHP cruiser is on the way. Taking a look at Santa Cruz on southbound Highway 1 just north of Soquel Drive, there was a produce spill earlier. The Department of Transportation is in the process of doing some cleanup on the road, so look out there. We have another traffic hazard on Winkle Avenue at Soquel Drive, so watch out there also. And on northbound Highway 1 just south of Emmeline Avenue, there is garbage bag and soda cans in the road, so look out there. Now for some weather. Your forecast for tonight is partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming mostly clear. Lows are in the mid-30s to upper 40s. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. I hope you guys have a fantastic afternoon. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Still to come today, Dar Jamil, independent journalist who reports on Iraq, will join us in about 10 minutes with a reality check. Did the surge work, and did this fall's propaganda campaign persuade Americans that everything's groovy in occupied Iraq? And next hour, we open up the free speech zone with California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We'll talk about how the political landscape is changing here. A couple of more votes in the Senate and the Assembly, but probably not enough to break the deadlock over tax increases to cover the budget gap. We continue with our guest, Rob Ritchie. He's executive director of Fair Vote, their website, fairvote.org, and he's the co-author of Every Vote Equal and Whose Votes Count. And, Rob, one thing that I'm intrigued with is the idea of not eliminating the Electoral College, but just essentially bypassing it through a campaign that an attorney named Barry Fathom was on our show recently talking about. And I think it's nationalpopularvote.com or .org. And their scheme essentially is to get sufficient state legislatures that represent 270 votes, which everybody's fresh in the knowledge of. That's what's required to win the presidency. And to do that by, number one, eliminating winner-take-all in the state-level races so that if John McCain got 20% of the vote in California, he'd get 20% of the Electoral College votes. And that essentially would permit the popular vote to determine who is elected president. I support this, and I think that it is something that will be very hard to implement, though, because in the grand compromise that created the Senate and originally had the Senate choosing our president, the founding fathers feared direct popular vote for president.
Well, I wanted to say that one of the books I'm co-author of is Every Vote Equal with Barry and John Koza, and that's a proposal I'm passionately involved in supporting.
Now I get the connection. Okay,
it's a little different than the way you describe it, and I wanted to make sure people realize that difference. It is not proportional allocation, like say the Democratic primaries. If you get 20% of the vote in a state, you're going to get 20% of that state's convention delegates. The idea is that what we want is to have every vote equal, that we want to have every voter cast a ballot for president equal to everyone else's. And no matter where that American lives, they should have an equal vote for president. And to do that, what a state is doing is, and this is fully constitutional, this is sort of acting on the constitutional sort of responsibilities that our framers gave states to figure out how to structure presidential elections, is that they choose to, by statute, to change the law for how they allocate that state's electoral votes. And the laws governing what states do now have been passed by state statute, most of them dating back to, say, for the older states, the 1820s and 1830s. Very few states from the beginning did the law that we have now, which is, in most states, which is whoever wins that state's popular vote gets all of that state's electoral votes. The idea of this proposal is that we want the winner of the national popular vote in all 50 states to win every single election with every vote equal. And to do that, a state agrees to give all of its electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote in all 50 states, but only in concert with enough other states that it will guarantee election of the president. So my state of Maryland has passed this proposal, and three other states have passed it. But that didn't affect what we did this year because there weren't enough states in that have passed the proposal. But there's a bunch of states have moved it. California, the governor has vetoed it twice, but I think he seems to be warming up to it, and maybe watching California get totally ignored in another presidential election might get him to realize that this is the best way to go, and that number of states that needs to pass it, they need to collectively have a majority of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a clear roadmap to that 270 electoral votes. There are so many states that are disadvantaged by the current system, and even the states that are temporarily in a good place, the swing states, the voters in those states support an every vote equal kind of vote for president. So this is one of those issues where you got a 70% popular support for it, and it just takes state statutes. It just takes state laws. And we just have to get enough states to pass it to represent a majority of the Electoral College. So I think there's every reason to believe that we've just gone through the last presidential election night where we have to look at, the red blue maps of each state rather than what every voter has done. And that's what I think we need to move to.
So you think you'll be able to get the national popular vote in place by 2012?
Absolutely. I mean, four states, this only went public in February 2006. first bill was introduced that month, and it's already passed 21 state legislative chambers, has public support and endorsement of more than 1,000 state legislators. And this year's election has only confirmed how problematic the current system is. I mean, the candidates spent 99, the major party candidates for president and vice president spent 99% of their visits in just 17 states. And that's very similar to in 2004 when they spent 99% of their campaign money in just 16 states.
Well, we only see them in California when they come for fundraisers.
Exactly, fundraiser or the Jay Leno show or something. And it really begins to have an impact on voter participation patterns. You had people under 30 were a third more likely to vote in the 10 closest states in 2004 than the rest of the country. The interests of Californians are definitely weighted less than other people, you know, because they're not polled when they're in the debates. They're not pitching any of their arguments to Californians because it just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, Rob, it's a pleasure to meet you, and I'm glad to know that you're a friend and co-author with Barry Fadden. He's written most of the ballot measures in California, some stinkers. But this is an excellent project that you guys are working on, and I fully support it. So
great.
Joining us today. And fairvote.org is where you can get more information. We've been talking with Rob Ritchie. Coming up next, a reality check on Iraq. Dar Jamail joins us on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Wrap me in the flag. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. I come from the heart of the baby boom, raised in white suburbia to believe that America was the greatest country on earth. In the 70s, I traveled behind the Iron Curtain where people would want to know everything about America, and they quietly pressed notes into your hand saying, USA, yes. But there was also the memory of those visits to the South, seeing those peculiar signs on the bathrooms, and knowing that the legacy of those days let the tyrants of the world say, you see, that's what America really is. There's a reason conservatives were able to make the flag an issue. It's because, yes, many people of my generation had trouble displaying the flag and meaning it, especially lately. In 2000, the Supreme Court tips the election. 2003, we start a war over weapons that aren't there. 2005, New Orleans. 2008, the financial system collapses. And you wonder, why does stuff like that happen? Now it's clear that if those things hadn't happened, last night wouldn't have happened either. Now, I know some people are gloomy today, but I have to think that nobody's gloomier than those recruiters in the radical madrasas of the Middle East, because, yes, the 44th president of the United States of America is going to be Barack Hussein Obama, and he was chosen overwhelmingly in a free election. I have to think that the job of signing up martyrs to wage jihad on the great Satan just got a whole lot harder. And I also think that the American flag is going to reappear in places where it has been absent too long. And while this, of course, doesn't end racism, it means that for my kids, race is destined to be old news. They'll just have to find something else to fight about. Now this.
Who's always there for you? Your mum? Maybe, yeah, but sometimes she's a bit chatty with you. Oi, when are you going to get a girlfriend business? Now, GEICO, they're always there for you. They have been for over 70 years. They insure over 8 million policyholders, and their customer satisfaction is at 97%. With GEICO service, no wonder it's the third largest automobile insurance company. Your mum might cook better, but everything else, it's a very close call.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Dave Ross of the CBS Radio Network.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
We've got it pretty good on the Central Coast. There are lots of cool places to run all over the county. Wilder, Nicene Marks, Poganip, Westcliff, they're all great. This is Adam at Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz. Our whole staff not only works here, they run here too. Aaron and I are training for the Cal International Marathon. James and Alexia can be found jogging on Westcliff with their new puppy Sundance. And Brennan Lynch is having a great cross-country season for Santa Cruz High. Chris Proffitt left us to run for UC Irvine, so Charlie has joined our team and is starting at UCSC this fall. Come into Central Coast Running and enjoy running and walking with us.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at centralcoastrunning.com.
Let me welcome you
This Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m., it's an all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour coming to the Columba Jazz Center in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, where people don't have opinions, they have convictions, mostly misdemeanors. Santa Cruz, where you can have Reiki performed on your car during an oil change. Santa Cruz, a city so progressive people debate whether or not breast milk is vegan. Richard Stockton here to tell you we're going to be talking about happiness. This Friday, November 7th, yoga instructor in high heels and lipstick, comedian Vanda Mikulowski, Hindu comedian Daya, comedian Mickey Joseph, sound effects master Sven Davis, the Planetoid Band, the Outpatient Players, all at the Columba in Santa Cruz this Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m. Tickets $18 in advance, $23 at the door. Get your tickets at Santa Cruz, at Streetlight Records or Gateways Books, or go online, planetcruise.org. You're going to laugh your glutes off.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can recite them.
For the first time in my life.
And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them.
For the first time in my life, Americans elected an anti-war candidate as president.
They only want to tell you lies, no. Never ever going to tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies, no. Never ever going to tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies, it's time. It's time to go home. To take our boys and win. To take our girls and win.
It is truly historic. Those of us who voted for George McGovern in 1972 hoped that he was going to win and end the war in Vietnam. Over 55 million Americans went to the polls yesterday, many of them expecting that Barack Obama is going to end our involvement in Iraq. I think we need a reality check, and whenever we do, I turn to Dar Jamail, the independent journalist who has spent quite a bit of time in Iraq over the last few years. He's the author of Beyond the Green Zone, dispatches from an unembedded journalist in occupied Iraq. He's been hunkered down completing a new book. Dar, how are you today?
Great to be with you, Peter. Thanks.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and as I mentioned, there is good news because this is the first time I've seen Americans elect an anti-war candidate. That was really what differentiated Barack Obama from many of his Democratic primary opponents, and it certainly was a point of distinction with Senator McCain. But the troubled American economy really pushed the national security issues and the mess in Iraq in particular well onto back burners this fall. And Obama has, I think, held relatively firm where when he talks about it in his speeches, he references Iraq and his plan to bring our troops home. But it's a very fuzzy plan. And I'm the first to admit that. Tell me your thoughts about the prospects of Barack Obama bringing home American troops.
Well, I too would like to start with just acknowledging how historic it is for the reasons you gave, and to have an African American as president of the United States, and to see him not just defeat John McCain and Sarah Palin, but basically give them a good drubbing was a very hopeful thing for me as well. To witness, and I think the millions and millions of people that did vote for Barack Obama. But we do need to be very clear that while it was a lot of people put enormous energy and work into helping get him elected, and that is to be commended, it was an amazing campaign and brilliantly run, and Barack Obama's poise through it all was almost superhuman through everything that had gone on over the last couple of years. But now the real work really begins, and I'm hearing that from a lot of corners as well, that okay, he's going to be in there. He's certainly pliable, and it does appear as though he is going to be listening to our voices much more than any candidate that has been in that office in years and years, if not decades. And that's a very good thing. But definitely our work is cut out for us in that if you look at the people that he's already either starting to appoint or in the lineup to be appointed to different cabinet positions, a lot of these are old liberal hawks. And we need to look at the fact that so far his advisors are calling to keep upwards of at least 60,000 U.S. military personnel in Iraq until at least the end of his first term. And that's something that is not, that is really not something that we can stand for. It's not what the majority of Iraqis want, and it's not what the majority of the people in this country want. And hopefully, with him being who he is, and the willingness to listen to what the majority of the people in this country want, hopefully there will be some movement on that. But as it stands right now, it's not a pretty picture for his plans in Iraq. He certainly has his hands full.
Well, and the Maliki puppet government in some ways may make the decision for him and for us because the clock is ticking on the current occupation deal. We don't have a new SOFA agreement. We don't have a UN extension. And so it could, you know, strengthen the hand of the Iraqis as they try to negotiate a deal with the lame duck Bush administration related to the future of American forces there. And it seems that Maliki is relatively firm that he wants U.S. troops out by the end of 2010, just 2 years from now.
That's true. Actually, it's by the very end of 2011 is when he's calling for them to be out. I think it's been a very smart political move on behalf of the Maliki government of pushing it, of not negotiating on these key elements. To basically, I think they're hoping they're postponing it in order to get maybe a 6-month UN extension, so that therefore they would be able to negotiate with an Obama government rather than a Bush government. And I think that was a very wise move. And so that's another element where there is hope in that. There is room now to leverage. Okay, well, let's see if he's going to stand up and do what he says he's going to do. The Maliki government wants this. The majority of the Iraqi people want this. The majority of the American people want this. So we're going to really have to work hard to apply pressure in very leveraged positions in order to hopefully force him and his administration to pull out sooner than, at least as of right now, what they're planning on.
Dar Jamail is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's got a redesigned website at dar.org. His first name is D-A-H-R. That's all you need, dar.org. And you can get information on his reporting. And, Dar, your new book will be out when, and it's called what?
Well, it's not coming out until spring. I have finished the manuscript. We're doing edits now. It's called Military Resistors, Soldiers Who Refuse to Fight in Iraq, and it's about a burgeoning resistance within the U.S. military of people who have either served there and come back and have refused to redeploy, or people who have been called up and then refused to go over the myriads and myriads of stories. I mean, and it kind of comes as a shock to people to hear that there is actually a big resistance within the U.S. military, primarily because it really hasn't been getting any airplay in just about any of the corporate media. But I guess at the same time, that shouldn't come as a surprise to people like you and I.
Yeah. Now, Dar, we can say goodbye to candidate Obama. He's now the president-elect. He starts to get his national security briefings on Thursday. And so he will be gearing up during this transition period to take the oath on January 20th and go forward from there. Now, I have been critical, but not sharply critical, of candidate Obama for failing to properly articulate the true nature of the surge and to expose the phony claims by the Bush administration and the McCain campaign that the surge has worked as it was intended to do. And so I want to ask you, as the president emerges from the shell of the candidate here, what would you like to hear from Senator Obama, President Obama, we've got to get used to that, in terms of honest assessment of the situation in Iraq and the extent to which the surge did or did not work?
Well, I would like for him to simply be honest about the reality on the ground and say, look, the surge did have a dampening effect on violence. It did lower it to a certain degree, but we have a more unstable political situation in Iraq than ever, and the likelihood of it exploding in a violent way is upon us. I think it could happen sooner rather than later. In fact, in a lot of ways, it already is starting to happen. And him to give a very honest assessment, look, there's been 1.2 million Iraqis killed, 4.7 million are displaced from their homes. As we speak, we have more Iraqis still leaving the country than going back in. The military continues to be attacked over 1,500 times every single month. This demands radical change, and he needs to step up to the plate and really start to enact by a policy the change that he keeps talking about. And that begins with a gut-wrenching, honest assessment of what is happening, that Iraq has been eviscerated and the country is basically destroyed, and it continues to get worse over time. And the only thing that's going to change this is radical change, and that means starting to set firm, unmovable timetables and start pulling people out right away.
And Dar, do you think in the shift from the Bush administration to the Obama administration that some of the blinders and the filters will come off? And, you know, we know, for example, that the corporate media have skeleton crews in Iraq now. The television networks don't even have full-blown correspondents there. They've got some non-American camera people and some producer types. And if we had honest and accurate daily coverage of what's going on in Iraq, and if the Pentagon were giving us honest assessments instead of spin and propaganda, do you think we would get a healthier handle on the real situation in Iraq?
Absolutely we would, but I don't really see this disturbing trend changing unless, you know, unfortunately things don't really get coverage in Iraq unless there's some giant spectacular attack or a helicopter full of soldiers goes down and we have a large loss of life all in one go. And unfortunately, people are very weary of hearing about how bad it is over there. And the only thing that really garners people's attention is when we have a massive car bomb that takes out 100 people or, you know, a large loss of U.S. troop life all in one go. And I really don't see it changing. However, I think the situation on the ground, short of some of these radical changes that President Obama will need to make, I think we will see some big changes on the ground that will start to demand more attention, where we've had the U.S. form this 100,000-strong Sunni Awakening Force militia, and those are disbanded, and now they're not getting paid, or they're not getting paid what they were. We are already starting to see violent clashes between those men and members of Maliki security forces, and it's akin to kind of a second disbanding of an Iraqi military, albeit on a somewhat smaller scale. So the potential for massive violence springing up in just the next few months is very, very great. So really his feet are on the fire, and he's going to need to make some big changes really quick in order to avoid the situation really melting down back into levels that we saw back around 2005, 2006.
Now, here's an account today from the Associated Press, Dateline Baghdad. Bombs exploded at a bus station and a small market, killing 15 people Tuesday. In an increase in bloodshed in the Iraqi capital after a week of relative calm, police and hospital officials said. Now, relative calm is a very relative term. And this is reported, and then two paragraphs later it said the blast came a day after a series of bombings killed 10 people and wounded 40 more. So I find it hard to accept these characterizations that things have become relatively calm and they're only punctuated by, you know, little outbursts of violence. Because, and I'm not in denial here, Dar, I do understand that the overall level of violence has decreased, and I'm pleased by that. Nobody celebrates the loss of life and carnage in occupied Iraq. At the same time, I'm just suspicious of the way these reports are spun and this idea of relative calm.
Well, you're exactly right, and spin is precisely what this is, you know, calling it relative calm. I mean, who here in the United States would stand for a media that called it relative calm if we had violence across the country that was killing between 500 and 1,000 people a month? If we had security forces in our country being attacked between 1,500 and 1,800 times a month by rebels? If we had no medical system? If we had Americans fleeing the borders as refugees more so than people who were coming back home? If the average home had 2 hours of electricity per day? if unemployment was up to 40%. I mean, who here would call that relative calm? It's really outrageous that they continue to report on that as they are, but that is precisely how they've been effective at kind of repeating this and inundating people with this over and over and over. So most people do start to think, well, things do seem to be getting a little bit better. But again, that lacks context, and we need to really remind people how devastated the country truly is. I mean, in Baghdad, a capital city of 6 million people, one out of every four people there are displaced from their home. That is a tremendous number. And then countrywide, we're talking one out of every six Iraqis are displaced from their homes. And according to a recent UNHCR survey, of all those who have actually fled their homes, less than 90% say they're going to return. That means the middle class, the technical class, the professional class, most of whom have fled, are not going back. And what does that spell for the country's future? So all of this context needs to be remembered when we read these AP stories with these specifically chosen words like relative and improvement and things like this.
Yeah, Dar Jamil with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. His book, Beyond the Green Zone, is out in soft cover. And you can read his work at his website, dar.org, D-A-H-R, dar.org. You got a question? Bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on Soquel Drive at Dobbin Biss Avenue in Santa Cruz, there is a traffic collision with no injuries. CHP is on the scene. Now for some weather today. Tonight will be partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming mostly clear. Lows will be in the mid-30s to upper 40s. Sunset is at 5:06 p.m. tonight. Here are some temperatures for today. Big Sur is currently 60 degrees. Carmel Valley is 60 degrees. Monterey is also 60 degrees. Salinas is 61. Santa Cruz is 61. Hollister is 61 and clear. And Gilroy is 61 and mostly cloudy. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Enjoy this wonderful afternoon and have a great commute. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream with the Quantum Leap, 9 p.m. Saturday.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. This is not dying.
This is Bob Oliver inviting you to participate in the Quantum Leap. Raise issues, ask questions. Together we find answers and solutions. And think for yourself on 540 AM, KRXA 540.
The Peter B. Collins Show. and listeners have rallied to help support the Peter B. Collins Show and keep us on the air. You can help, too, and I'd appreciate it. Just drop by my website at peterbcollins.com and click on the link that says you can help. John Garamendi, California's lieutenant governor, will join us about 15 minutes from now. We'll talk about the election results and the continuing budget problems in Sacramento. Dar Jamail is my guest right now, Beyond the Green Zone, his most recent book. It's out in soft cover, subtitled Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. And, Dar, one of the other issues here about what I consider to be the American propaganda about the improved situation in Iraq relates to the ethnic cleansing, where they separated Shia and Sunnis into their own enclaves with these huge concrete barriers and walls and checkpoints and that sort of thing. And there were some kind of happy talk news stories that were published in October where, at least in a couple of cases, those walls were removed and ordinary traffic and thoroughfares have been restored. And I'm trying to figure out just how much that is anecdotal and how much it might represent a real thawing of the ethnic tensions, particularly in Baghdad itself.
It's extremely anecdotal because the reality is that one of the primary reasons why there is less violence is because we're basically looking at the in-game strategy of the so-called surge, a key element of which was to split up the neighborhoods, make them completely either Sunni or Shia, have no more mixed neighborhoods, and they've done that. So that's why one in four people in Baghdad are displaced from their homes, and that's why fewer people are being killed, fewer being, as I said before, between 500 and 1,000 a month countrywide, which is still completely unacceptable. I mean, we still have two dozen people on average every single day in Baghdad alone being kidnapped. So we still have the brunt of these neighborhoods that were walled off remain that way, despite protests from people within them to bring the walls down. And there have been a few isolated incidents of, okay, well, this one section, we decided to open this up. Let's bring our media in there. Let's bring some military journalists and some embeds and get the story out. But overall, the situation is still very grim. Most people are loath to even leave the neighborhoods where they live because they're afraid if they go into another neighborhood controlled by a different militia backed by the U.S. military, then they'll be in great danger, and they're right in thinking that. So it remains mostly segregated. Traffic is limited by most people themselves to within their own neighborhoods, and they try not to go about the city if they can help it because they know if they leave their own neighborhood, they're literally taking their life into their own hands.
Dar, in a moment I want to get some comments from you on Afghanistan and Pakistan, but first I just wanted to know if there's anything else you'd like to add about the situation in Iraq that we haven't covered so far.
No, I think really just to remind people the gravity of the situation there, that even though it's not at the forefront in the news as it used to be a year or two ago, that still, just if you could imagine living your life with your family, with your loved ones, in a situation where there's literally no infrastructure. I mean, 2 hours of electricity a day, cholera outbreaks in the capital city and across south of Iraq that have killed scores. 70% of the country does not have access to safe drinking water, according to recent reports. And horrific unemployment. I mean, we have 7% here, and we are feeling it. We are feeling the recession. It is a difficult time economically. It's going to keep getting worse for a while. And over there, they have 40%. On a good month, they have 40% unemployment. So I think people just need to really remember that this is a bleeding, festering situation, and it is going to keep getting worse over time. And it's another reason why, for those who did vote for Barack Obama, the time to really apply pressure now to really force him and his administration to make the radical changes that are going to be necessary in the foreign policy of this country, particularly in Iraq, but the time to do that is now.
Mm-hmm. So, Dar, I have been concerned about the situation in Afghanistan. We had another errant airstrike that hit a wedding group. 42 people, including women and children, reported dead. Also, October saw the highest level of strikes by Predator drones in primarily north and south Waziristan inside the Pakistan territory, but also some of those raids occurred in Afghanistan. It appeared they were really hoping to nail Osama bin Laden before yesterday's election. Now, with that behind us, perhaps the Bush administration will dial back some of these strikes. But what are your thoughts about what happens between now and January and Barack Obama's commitment to put more American troops in Afghanistan?
Well, both of those are worrisome. I mean, starting with the latter, his idea of putting more troops in there is akin to putting more troops into Iraq, that it will inevitably make the situation worse. And we're seeing that now. I mean, the parallels between Afghanistan and Iraq, there are many, that when you're conducting these airstrikes, and I'm sure you remember, Peter, that, you know, there's regularly, particularly in the first couple of years of the occupation, the same incidents of hitting wedding parties, of hitting farmers in their fields, of detaining so many innocent people. Well, this helped form the resistance, and that's what I saw on the ground, and that's what I've later seen by interviewing scores and scores of people in the U.S. military for my new book, them saying repeatedly, we created the resistance. When you bomb people, innocent people, when you detain them, when you don't help rebuild their infrastructure, guess what? People get angry, and eventually they will start picking up arms against you. And so we're seeing that same process now happening really on steroids in Afghanistan. So the idea of sending more troops there is another thing that is really just, very bluntly, it's just not going to be the direction that they're going to want to go if they really want to try to change the situation there.
Now, I want to see an open and honest debate about any, you know, mission creep in Afghanistan. I want to see a clear mission for troops that we send there. And I want to see that pesky Colin Powell exit strategy, too, Dar.
That would be a good idea, absolutely. And then, you know, that does broaden out to encompass that entire region. You know, this is happening in Pakistan, where there's a very escalated level of anti-American sentiment already.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pouring more fuel onto the fire.
Yeah. Dar Jamail, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, Peter. Thank you.
Visit his website, dahrdar.org.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Barack Obama put together a top-notch campaign team. Now he turns his attention to forming an administration.
Appointing the right people to the right job is essential because you don't want to get to January 20th and find out that you put people where they don't belong.
Political scientist Charles Jones, given the state of the economy, one of Mr. Obama's first major picks is expected to be his Treasury Secretary. Secretary of Defense is also high on the list. And then there's the top diplomatic post. CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod looks at the options.
John Kerry and Bill Richardson are two big names being considered for Secretary of State. Senator Richard Lugar, a former chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, gives Obama a Republican option. And at Justice, either Eric Holder, a Clinton Justice Department official, or Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick would be the first African-American Attorney General. Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano is also under consideration.
The president-elect will have an eye-opening experience tomorrow, his first detailed look at the most highly classified U.S. intelligence. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reports.
The president starts each day with an intelligence briefing, and now Barack Obama will receive the same top-secret information, and he'll learn how it's acquired. Former CIA analyst Michael Scheuer, now at Georgetown University.
The world is a much more complicated place than he knew of while he was still running for office. The nature of these briefings are much more detailed, and I'm afraid much more ominous.
The president-elect will be briefed by the Director of National Intelligence and CIA officials on the world's trouble spots, from Afghanistan and Iraq to Iran and North Korea. Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Big sell-off on Wall Street. The Dow, after gaining some 300 points yesterday, lost nearly 500 today, closing at 91.39.
We basically woke up this morning with the same old problems. So Wall Street is now turning its attention to rising unemployment and the deteriorating economy and wondering what President Obama is going to do to fix things.
CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus says the market was rattled by a report that the economy lost 157,000 private sector jobs in October. That's the highest number in 6 years. Art Cashin of UBS Financial says there's a lot of pressure on the incoming administration.
President-elect Obama will not have the luxury of doing a slow, step-by-step transition. He and his team are seen as having to hit the ground running.
A baby boy born last night in Hollywood, Florida, was named Sanjay Obama Fisher. His father, Patrick, says he's a big fan of Barack Obama and felt the boy's birth on Election Day was an omen.
He finally came the day when he was not supposed to come, and it's on the day that he was announced president, so I know I got to name him after president.
Fisher says his son might not grow up to be president, but he's going to be somebody special. This is CBS News.
I'm Jim. Starting a construction business in this economy, you need every advantage you can get. That's why my accountant recommended Intuit QuickBooks. He said it's small business software that'll help me track every penny. Money in, money out, so I always know what's going on. So I tried it, and turns out he hit the nail right on the head. I can see all my money in one place. That's good, because I'm building more than houses. I'm building my business.
Intuit QuickBooks. Get back to business. Try it for free at QuickBooks.com.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your gas gauge.
Oh, my needle is asleep.
What's wrong, gas gauge?
For some reason, I haven't been moving.
Oh, well, that's probably because I got the Works Fuel Saver package at the dealership.
Oh.
Yeah, it's an oil change, tire rotation, and more, just $29.95 or less after a $10 mail-in rebate.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to stop for a sandwich. Do you want anything?
No, thanks. I'm full.
Good one.
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fee extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for rebate details through 11-30-08.
Barack Obama has a lot of campaign promises to keep, including one to his children. CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett has the story.
Barack Obama's daughters,
Sasha and Malia,
get a bonus now that they and their dad are headed to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
You have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House.
Animals and kids have been pals there before. Teddy Roosevelt's son, Quentin, once led a pony into the White House. Up an elevator they went to surprise Quentin's brother, Archie, who was sick in bed. The White House Historical Society says Tad Lincoln once harnessed two goats to a kitchen door and rode that through the East Room. Tad had a soldier's uniform made in his size. His toy cannon blasted the door of the cabinet room and caused havoc with Honest Abe's meeting with advisors. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
A 14-year-old Milwaukee boy is recovering from a very bad decision. Police say he escaped from a boot camp for troublesome teenagers and hid in a recycling bin full of cardboard. When the truck came to pick it up, the boy was compacted but survived. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
I'm Maria. I own Maria's Hair and Beauty Salon. Last year, I was neck-deep in invoices and receipts, so my friend suggested Intuit QuickBooks. I'm usually not that good with computer software, but she said I could try it online for free. So I did, and QuickBooks is great. So easy to use. Saves me hours tracking expenses. Now I can spend more time convincing my customers not to get that new style that only looks good on supermodels and poodles.
Intuit QuickBooks. Get back to business. Try it for free at QuickBooks.com.
Today, let's talk about commuting. You think yours is tough? Fact is, our cars and trucks just gotta take it. That's why right now there's Good Wrench and Go Time to help your Chevy continue to take it. Just go back to your participating Chevy dealer and head down their Good Wrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection. With fuel prices the way they are, taking proper care of your Chevy can help you get more out of every mile. Good Wrench and Go. We're keeping it simple. Offer ends November 30th.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Are you ready for one-party rule in Washington, this time the Democrats? Are you steady? Shall we say go? Well, the presidential election is behind us. Al Franken still doesn't know if he'll be the senator from Minnesota. And there are a few other unresolved issues. But it's a big sweep for the Democrats. Some excellent coattails from President Obama. And Bruce Rayner, who was on last hour from Unite Here, got me going on this thing that it just feels so good to say President Obama. Let's see if we can get Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi to chime in. Would you like to just say President Obama?
No, I would prefer to say President Barack Obama. How sweet the sound.
Hello, John.
How are you, Peter B?
Better.
Yes, much better. Much better than we were 2 days ago.
There's yeah. Both.
And there's change afoot.
I mean, Bush has left me poor, but I really feel a sense that the wrecking crew's damage will be brought to an end. And that whatever, you know, people have projected onto Barack Obama that might be beyond, you know, reasonable expectations, I still feel that going forward he has set a standard of hope, but a sense that we have to work with him to make progress. And so I don't feel he's presented false hope or a sense that he's got a magic wand that is going to fix the problems that Americans face.
Absolutely correct. His speech last night was very, very much in that frame, that we've got real challenges. We can only meet those challenges together. Also that we're part of the world. We're not the only part of the world. We're part of the world. We have to work together with the other countries of the world. And reaching out across all of America and inviting all of us to what is an enormous challenge to work together to solve that challenge. I think we can. If we stay with that framework, if we leave the ideological purity at the door and come into the chamber and say, okay, how are we going to solve this problem? Here's my idea. There's your idea. Let's figure it out. I really believe he can do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, you're a former football player. You've been in politics for more than 30 years. You've absorbed your share of body blows.
Yes.
Do you think that Barack Obama will be too conciliatory, too willing to work with the Republicans at the expense of his own agenda?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he has a very firm notion of where we must go. He laid it out in a very, very long primary campaign and also in the general election that there are certain directions that he believes we have to go. He's made it clear that the war in Iraq must come to an end. And as I look at it, the Iraq government thinks we ought to leave too. And I'm going, okay, sounds good, let's go. I think he has that firmly in mind. I think he's going to be cautious about how that's done. With regard to the economy, I really believe that he hit it right on when he said this solution is a four-letter word. J-O-B-S, jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And government programs that will create jobs are very, very much on his agenda and on the Democratic Party's agenda, much like Franklin Roosevelt did back in the 30s. You put people to work, they're able to stay in their home, they earn a living, they keep their pride. They can, you know, look their children in the eye and say, hey, I'm a wage earner here and we're going to be okay. And the economy can move in. There are so many things we need to do. Our infrastructure, hospitals, education. We can put people in the classroom to assist teachers. Many, many things we can do by putting people to work.
Mm-hmm.
Will it take money? Yes. But if he brings this war to an end in a timely way, then there's $10 billion a month we'll have available right there.
Yeah. John Garamendi with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls are welcome here. We're in the free speech zone, so grab a line at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, tell me a little bit about the political evolution of John Garamendi in this past year. You and I had a spirited conversation when I was remote from our former affiliate in Sacramento last January, and at that point you were strong. In fact, you were on your way to a Bill Clinton event that night, right after the radio show.
Well, I think it was a Hillary Clinton event, if I recall correctly. But
it was for her, but I think he was the guest.
Your memory is so much better than mine. But the point is that I had the great honor of working in the Clinton administration and working very closely with Hillary Clinton on health care and other issues. And as a result of that, gained an enormous appreciation for her talents and a great deal of loyalty. And, yes, I was a Hillary fan throughout the primaries. When her opportunity to become the Democratic nominee was over, I was easily persuaded to become a Barack Obama fan. I'd watched him. I watched him grow over the almost the 20 months of his campaign. First met him in Southern California at an event at the University of Southern California, and recognized that he was an extraordinary individual. And then just watched the growth of this of him as a candidate. In knowledge about the United States, about the issues of the world, and his ability to, constant and consistent ability to inspire. So it was a very easy transition for me when the Clinton campaign was over to transition and become a very strong supporter of Barack Obama.
So as you look at the picture, we'll delve into state issues here in a moment, but on the national level, with 56 seats locked in the Senate and the chance to get probably two more out of the four that remain undecided, and a pretty significant gain in the House up to 250-plus seats, do you have any concerns about one-party rule?
No, actually I don't, and the rest of the world basically does have one-party rule, and if that party screws up, then they're thrown out, and the other party takes over and runs it until they screw up, and then they get thrown out. I think it's a system that works around the world, and it certainly has worked from time to time in the United States. It is the opposite of gridlock. And we can sure use the opposite of gridlock in Washington, D.C., as well as in Sacramento. We need to get things done. And if the Democrats will have the power, not necessarily the absolute because of the filibuster in the Senate,
right,
but still very considerable power. And if we screw it up, then, okay, throw us out and let's have the Republicans come back. But I don't think we're going to screw it up, and I think that we clearly have to act judiciously and quickly to deal with the international issues and certainly with the economic issues, which are indeed worldwide issues now.
Here's Nancy in Winters joining us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Lieutenant Governor Garamendi. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm just wondering if we can look forward to having restoration of our civil liberties.
You want your Fourth Amendment back?
Oh, I think that'd be a nice idea.
Well, you know, this call is being monitored and recorded by the National Security Agency, and they'll decide what to do with you later, Nancy.
I think they probably have already decided.
Well, she's really asking for too much. I mean, after all. Now, the reality is that among the many, many things that the Bush and the Republican administration have brought upon this country is the very rapid erosion of our civil rights and civil liberties. Will they be restored? I think many of them will. Many people that look at the terrorism issues, which are very real and have to be dealt with, think that we in this nation don't need to destroy our civil liberties to deal with those issues. And I happen to agree. So I would see that many of those issues, much of which are still secret, will be terminated, and we will perhaps never really know how much we lost because we'll not exactly know which of those obnoxious and unnecessary things no longer exist.
Nancy, thank you for the question,
sure.
And do me a favor.
Sure.
Keep asking.
All right, thanks.
Good point. point.
And, you know, John, every time I talk to a Congress member or senator, one of my first questions is, may I have my Fourth Amendment rights back? Because I just think that was a critical rollover, and unfortunately the Democrats and Senator Obama voted for the FISA reform.
Well, that is one of several reforms, and I know it's accurate that the Bush administration went far beyond whatever limitations may have been in that reform.
Yeah.
And took it to excess, some of which is reported now as they finalize some regulations that are going to make even more mincemeat out of our civil liberties.
Yeah, that's the FBI no-knock rules.
Well, among other things that the FBI will be allowed to do, and other investigatory agencies.
And let me recommend a book that I recently read, John, and the author was on our program. James Bamford is an expert on the NSA, and his newest book about them is called The Shadow Factory. And it's chilling when you see the extent to which, and his book is all unclassified, so it's what we know, doesn't include what we know we don't know. But it's just so pervasive, and virtually every form of communication is being intercepted and subject to monitoring. They can't listen to all of it, but they do record it all, and they're saving it on these huge server farms that they've built, some of which are subcontracted out to vendors, two of which are aligned with the government of Israel and its Unit 8200, which was it's their equivalent of the NSA. And so there are a number of really important issues here, and I have to believe that any member of Congress or the Senate who had read James Bamford's book could not have voted for the FISA law that was jammed through this past summer.
Well, you raise a very good point, and before you even get to the federal government, when I was insurance commissioner, I became deeply concerned about the databases that were being collected for the purposes of determining who could and who would not get insurance and what you would pay for it. Mm-hmm. Everything from driver's records to, and we believe, medical records, as well as insurance records. All of those things are on databases, and the information is mined and used to determine what opportunities we'll have to, in this case, simply buy insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure the federal government does much, much more than that. I would hope and I would pray that the next Attorney General and Barack Obama as president will really take a long, hard look at this and make a clear determination on what we really need to know,
right,
rather than what somebody might think needs to be known.
John Garamendi with us as we continue. I want to talk about Proposition 8. I want to talk about the change in the Assembly and Senate composition and the upcoming lame duck legislative session in Sacramento to deal with the current budget shortfall. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on Highway 129, just east of the Pajaro River Bridge, there has been a traffic collision. We have no further details, but CHP is on the way. Otherwise, you should have a smooth commute. All other roads and highways are looking clear right now. Now for some temperatures. Big Sur is currently 60 degrees and clear. Carmel is 59 degrees and clear. Carmel Valley is 56 degrees. Salinas is 63 degrees and clear. Santa Cruz is 61 and mostly cloudy. Gilroy is 61 and mostly cloudy. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a safe commute and stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Score one for the connubial narcs.
Every time we think about same-sex marriage, it makes us sick to our guts. I mean, two people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship, what are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Now, a man should not lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three-button suits. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married.
Well, that's Roy Zimmerman's take on same-sex marriage. And California voters, mostly in from the coast, soundly embraced Proposition 8. It looks like it'll pass. All precincts have reported, and it's 52.5% to 47.5%, about 500,000 votes separating no from yes. And I understand there's still as many as 3 million absentee and uncounted votes, but it's hard to imagine that it could close the gap. John Garamendi is California's lieutenant governor. What's your take on this vote, and do you think this is a huge setback for the rights of same-sex couples?
Well, it certainly is a huge step back. There's no doubt about that. That right existed as it should. And this new, or this, the passage of this Proposition 8 takes away a right. Where we go from here, I don't know. The issue is not going to disappear. People will never give up their struggle to achieve equality and to achieve equal rights. So this will be coming back. The California public, even with this loss, has become much more tolerant of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
When will we revisit it? Now we got to go back and change the Constitution if it's going to be revisited.
And John,
a more difficult step.
Is there a legal?
It will be revisited.
Is there a legal possibility for the Supreme Court to overturn this constitutional amendment, or does it, by implication, amend the Constitution and reach beyond the court?
Well, I am not a constitutional lawyer, nor am I a lawyer at all. It just seems to me that unless it's somehow in violation of the federal constitution, which is the overriding constitution, then I don't know how a California court could set this constitutional amendment aside. Mm-hmm. However, let me end where I started, and that is I am not a lawyer nor a constitutional lawyer, but I can assure you that lawyers are looking at this on all sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are those that argue that the marriages that have taken place are not legal. Again, that'll be a very dicey legal question,
sure,
which I'm not
mm-hmm.
about to be able to adjudicate.
Yeah. All right, John, I want to turn now to the legislature. I haven't seen the final tally, but it looks like the Democrats picked up 2 seats in the Assembly and 1 in the Senate. Is that the count you have?
I count three. One here in the Bay Area, Contra mm-hmm. Costa, Sacramento region with Buchanan.
Yeah.
Another one in the Inland Empire. This would be the Imperial and Palm Springs area. And another one in San Diego. So I count mm-hmm. three.
Assembly. Okay.
There are several others that are very, very close. Mm-hmm. Maybe 3 others that I'm aware of that are very close with a lot of votes that have not yet been counted, both provisional and absentee votes.
And on that basis, then, is it worth it for the governor to call a lame duck session with the same members who refused to raise taxes in the past?
Well, I think it's worth the while to do it. Some of them may have learned a lesson that the public really wants to solve these problems, and I think that's one way to read the loss of seats by Republicans. And hopefully, the second reason is that this issue is an immediate issue. It has to be dealt with. The sooner it's dealt with, the easier it is to resolve. Not that it's easy. I mean, this is a horrible, difficult problem. But every month that goes by, it's that much more difficult because the ability to make cuts or to raise revenue is 1 month less. So it's good that the governor would call it. It would be very, very important for everyone to leave their ideology at the door as they enter the chambers, and try to find a path that really works for California. It's very clear to me that one should look at the history of Reagan, Duke Magian, and Wilson, 3 of the most conservative governors in California's recent history.
Mm-hmm.
Faced with a situation like this, they did the 3 R's. They made reforms, they raised revenue, and they made reductions.
Mm-hmm.
Therein lies the solution. There is always room for improvement in governmental programs, efficiency. We certainly talk about the prison system, but have done little. Education can certainly use better systems, better and reform in the education system and the healthcare system. There's 70% or yeah. more of the budget right there.
John Garamendi, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, Peter.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Your calls and comments welcome next in the Free Speed Zone, 888-5 Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If
you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain in your body. With six professionals, Cornerstone offers hormone balancing for men and women, all natural, no side effects. With our bodies filled with toxins and aches and pains, this approach works. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic neck pain for years. Trina Hammack uses a technique called quantum biofeedback, which to me is a miracle. I feel better and better each day, physically and mentally. Cornerstone offers lymphatic drainage, infrared saunas, ionic foot baths, massage, estheticians, and body strengthening specifically for your body so you'll start living pain-free naturally. Tired of taking medicine? Homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils are used. Finally, an alternative that works. Cornerstone Wellness Center, 1088 Cass Street, Monterey. Call today, 373-6204, 373-6204, or go to cornerstonewellnesscenter.com. Sun Street Centers has an outpatient recovery program designed for men and women with alcohol or drug issues, referred by the court system, employer-referred, or self-referred. Sun Street also takes insurance. At Sun Street, you're provided with one-on-one and group sessions that focus on relapse prevention, parenting skills, anger management, and family issues, and introduces the 12-step program. You can choose either 2 or 3 days a week or evenings with sites in Salinas and Marina. Just go to sunstreetcenters.org to sign up. sunstreetcenters.org.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
That's right. Lines are open for you right now in the celebration zone of the free speech zone. You want to take a victory lap? You've earned it. I've got four lines open for you right now, so don't hesitate. Pick up your phone and call me at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Here comes Barack. Well, what an election night it was. I have to say that I was prepared for the absolute worst. I was very concerned that states like Ohio and Florida would be very close and subject to manipulation or voter theft, election theft. Not voter theft, election theft. Vote theft, yes. And so when one of the networks, I think I was watching CNN, called Ohio for Obama, it was in the 7 p.m. hour Pacific time. And I thought, that seems premature, because they were basing it on exit polls and 16% of the precincts reporting. But as I thought about my hesitation, I was thrilled that instead of waiting for 2 a.m. and then have Fox call it for the Republicans, we saw the networks in a real competition to call the winner seconds after the polls closed here in California and other West Coast states at 8 p.m. our time. And it was only minutes later, in fact, at that point, our group said, well, let's see what they're doing over at Fox. And And at 8:02, Fox had declared Obama the winner. And that said to me, well, if Fox, with Karl Rove as one of their lead analysts now, is willing to declare this election for Obama, that means the Republicans have decided it's not close enough to steal. And with all their efforts on the front end of voter suppression and challenging and caging, intimidation, it appears that they didn't go to the back end this year. Now, I say appears because I'm really talking about the presidential race exclusively. Greg Palast suggests that as many as 50,000 voters in Georgia were not allowed to vote on real ballots. They were shifted to provisional ballots. And now we will have to see if in the Chambliss race there they are counted. And as I pointed out earlier in the program today, this avalanche for Obama should not be permitted to cover up the very real problems we have with our election system in this country. So it's a real relief to me that we're not in overtime, we're not in legal challenges, we didn't have to fly lawyers into Ohio or Florida or elsewhere for post-election shenanigans or skirmishes. But we cannot be complacent and just say that, well, we got the result we wanted, therefore the system works. The system sucks. I don't think I could put it any more bluntly. 888-5-PETER-B, I'd like to hear your comments on the day after the election. But first, I want to run down the ballot measures here in California and the results. The high-speed train bond measure passed, and so 35 years from now, there will be a train from San Francisco to Los Angeles that gets you there in about 3 hours, maybe. The real brilliant move was the Humane Society got 63% for Proposition 2, which will in the future require farmers to let animals live in cages big enough for them to move around. The hospital bond measure also passed narrowly. That one, narrowly isn't correct. 54.8 to 45%. And so that one goes forward. And there are questions about that. It appears a lot of the money is going to go to private hospitals who are using taxpayer money to for capital construction projects. But given the situation in Sacramento, I just don't think they had a lot of other choices. On parental consent for a minor to have an abortion, Californians were smart enough to reject this yet again, 52 to 48%. But they'll be back. On Proposition 5, which would have diverted drug offenders into rehab and helped reduce our prison population, voters took the spin from political leaders who joined ranks with the Prison Guards Union and defeated it, roughly 60-40, and I'm disappointed by that. But voters were smart enough to smell the rat in Proposition 6. They voted down this measure, a boondoggle that would have cost hundreds of millions of dollars and not made Californians any safer. That one lost by almost 70-30, and again, I'm pleased to see that voters got the right call there. On Proposition 7, the renewable energy, I actually ended up voting for this because it seemed reasonable to me, and I thought that the opponents were all funded by the big utilities, but I'm on the losing side of that, 64-35 on Prop 7. We've already covered Prop 8, the same-sex marriage ban. It's winning narrowly and has not been certified, so it is still in play. Prop 9, which is called a victim's rights bill, which has a draconian measure that says that if you're a life prisoner and you go before the parole board and they decline to release you, you have to wait 15 years before you can come back. Currently, it's 1 year. 15 years. That is resentencing people without looking at their individual cases. It basically says that if the parole board isn't willing to release you today, that you're automatically sentenced to an additional 15 years. And I think that's unconstitutional and un-American. It passed with 53% of the vote. The T. Boone Pickens bailout package went down in natural gas flames, 59 to 40%. And again, I'm pleased to see the Californians read that one correctly. The redistricting measure number 11 is too close to call, and that will be decided by absentee ballots. And the veterans bond issue number 12, I believe, passed with a comfortable margin. Now to your phone calls, and thanks for lighting up the board. First up, we want to welcome Dave Meserve, who served on the Arcata City Council, and I've had the opportunity to meet him a couple of times on my visits to Humboldt County. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
And you and others spearheaded an effort to pass ordinances to ban military recruiters from approaching people under the age of 18.
That's correct. We had measures in both the city of Arcata and the neighboring city of Eureka, and we're happy to report that they both passed with pretty high numbers.
Yeah, 73% in Arcata and 56% in Eureka.
That's correct.
So what do you think drove this? What is it that alerted people to, you know, these recruiters who were targeting high school students and often persuading them to join the military and end up fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan?
Well, it was very interesting. We ran, I think, a good informational campaign informing people who did not have students in schools or did not realize that this was going on. But the interesting thing about it is that actually more people voted on this measure than voted on any of the city council measures in the city.
Really?
And the majority that we got was higher than all except for one city council race. And so I think what we had was people across the board and without regard to their political affiliation who really care about their kids and do not think it's a good idea for military recruiters to be able to initiate contact to talk them into joining the military.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I say, it was completely nonpartisan. And I think that we had people on the left and people on the right. It was not in any way anti-military either.
Mm-hmm.
We made a point of recognizing the necessity of a defensive military, but saying that it's just not proper to recruit kids for that military.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad, and I'm glad you were able to win support from people who we might describe as pro-military, because I do think, as you just described it, this is an issue that goes beyond, you know, partisan politics and is a simple, basic, fundamental policy about protecting our young people from predatory behavior by the government or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, another thing that we found gratifying was we had kind of expected that in what has been described as the progressive bastion of Arcata that we would be able to pass this. But to be able to pass it by a 56% majority in Eureka, I think was quite a coup. And that was because it appealed to people of all political bents. And so we're very happy about it passing in Eureka as well as Arcata.
Great work, Dave. Thanks for your report.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. Good to talk to you. Now to Billy in Capitola. Hey, Billy.
Hey, that's pretty exciting. Nice job of those guys.
Yeah, it is. So, President Barack Obama.
Wow. Now, we didn't dare really believe it was going to happen, even though it looked like it was going to happen. And, you know, the fact they couldn't steal it from us, wow. You know, I haven't been able to stop crying. It's sort of, you know, and I'm a big fella, so it's sort of embarrassing.
Yeah, well, it was pretty cool to see Jesse Jackson in tears there last night.
It's so big. People don't get, I don't think, people just don't get how big it is, how big it is for everybody in this country and everybody around the world is thrilled with this result. I heard some idiot on local radio here talking about he heard somebody from Hamas wanted to see Obama win, so he was going to vote against them on the fence. And they went, well, yeah, our enemies want Obama to win, and so do all our friends and everybody else who doesn't even know us.
It was neat on Tom Hartman's show today. He took calls from all over the world. And it was touching to hear these expats and some non-Americans who were calling to congratulate us on finally getting it right.
Oh, well, you know, I remember 4 years ago when Bush and Harr finally become reelected, there was this great website with all these messages from around the world commiserating with us for, you know, somehow we'd get through it even though we'd made that horrible mistake. I want to talk about Proposition 8 real quick.
Just one sec. The one other one from 04 was, how can 55 million Americans be so stupid?
Yeah. That was the other part. They commiserated and also thought that there was something tragically wrong with us. And I kept remembering people kept telling us we needed to understand the red states. And, you know, that was bad advice. We just beat them badly.
All right, Prop 8.
I don't understand what people don't understand about separation of church and state. That Mormon money, I find it disgusting, and I want to know how we're going to punish them. I think we need to take away this this tax-free status.
Well, we also need to discipline the Catholic Church because they used every available means, including preaching from the pulpit and insertions in the newsletter, and Father Jeff resigned from, or actually got booted from his parish in Fresno for refusing to knuckle under and also for revealing that he's a gay man. So, you know, it's really offensive to me that these guardians of morality used deception. They might call it heavenly deception, but they used outright lies. In the advertising, $73 million was spent on both sides of the issue, but the lies that came from the pro-on-8 side came from people who are self-righteous and feel that it's justified to do anything to protect, you know, the biblical definition of marriage. And I ask them to honor the biblical message of truth and you know, thou shalt not tell a lie.
So you call it a lie. Well, they like to call it stealth.
Yeah.
It's got a better sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's disgusting, and that's the next thing. You know, we learned, of course, from Liddy Dahl that you can't be an atheist and run for office.
Mm-hmm.
And this church and state thing is the next thing we've got to fight. But Obama's the president. Thanks for all your work, buddy.
Thank you, Billy.
All right.
It's great to have you listening and calling in. We'll take a break and return for more of your phone calls. The Free Speech Zone continues here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on Highway 1 at Moss Landing Road, we have a traffic hazard. A large bird is standing in the roadway. We have another traffic hazard on northbound Highway 1 just north of Rio Del Mar Boulevard. CHP is on the scene there. Moving on to Highway 129 just east of Pajaro River Bridge, there is a traffic collision. We have no further details there. Now for some weather. Tonight it's partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming mostly clear. Lows are in the mid-30s to upper 40s. Northwest winds are 5 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northeast 5 to 10 miles per hour after midnight. Thursday will be mostly sunny. Highs will be in the 60s to mid-70s. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a safe commute and stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
I used to come here for the psychic fair. And, of course, personal growth has really expanded since that time. All of the mediums have become largest. But I have since figured out how to avoid earthquakes. When you find a fault, don't dwell on it. I love being in Santa Cruz because this is the leading edge. The leading edge. In fact, I found out that it was a Santa Cruz person who invented the world's first solar-powered tanning salon.
That's the Swami Beyondananda. I'm Richard Stockton with a minute from planetcruz.org.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, MSNBC Live anchors presented an outdated poll from Arizona State University Southwest to show that the presidential race was tightening in western battleground states. Here's David Schuster.
This number is getting some attention because it shows Barack Obama and John McCain tied at 46. And again, this is a state where NBC News' political unit has been projecting New Mexico in Barack Obama's column for over a month.
But the ASU poll was actually 2 weeks old when it was released. A newer Rasmussen poll, conducted on October 28th, 11 days after the ASU survey, shows Obama leading in New Mexico. But today's most outrageous comment goes to talk radio host Bill Cunningham discussing Barack Obama.
Jews for McCain, because Obama wants to gas the Jews, like the PLO wants to gas the Jews, like the Nazis gas the Jews. You got Obama introducing Arab terrorists.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Peter B. Collins Show. And if you're a gay or lesbian couple, you've just experienced Californication.
Psychic spies from China try to steal your mind's elation. Little girls from Sweden dream of silver screen quotation. And if you want these kind of dreams, it's Californication. It's understood that Hollywood sells Californication.
We continue in the free speech zone. We got Mark cruising along Highway 101 through Soledad this afternoon. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm fine. Good to hear from you.
Hey, I'm just so excited about what happened last night. A couple things. I go back to Barack's announcement speech in Springfield, Illinois, and that is what really made me realize that it wasn't about a party that was going to change the United States. I really felt it was going to be a person, and I think Barack has all the makings of that person, and it's on so many different levels that this fight to get to be the president, you know, with the primaries and this battle with McCain, you get so into whether he can win and how he can win. I think a lot of us didn't realize or think about what happens if he does win. What is it going to feel like? And the emotions last night were just huge for so many different people for so many different reasons.
Right. Now, you know? One of the reasons for that, Mark, is that he has this very broad theme about change. And he announced in his acceptance speech last night, his victory speech, that change is coming to America. But that change isn't really defined. We certainly know that it's a departure from the past, that it's not going to be the draconian policies of the Bush administration. But we don't know exactly what his definition of change is and how far or how fast we'll go.
On a very basic level, I'm biracial, and I've always felt in between. You know, even when you go for a job or different applications, what race are you? The box to check. And I've always looked at other, you know, and that's always been always bothered me because it's been other. But now, and I've always felt, you know what, it doesn't really matter. I'm an American, you know, I don't care. I may be Puerto Rican or Irish or whatever, but I'm American. And Barack, I think the whole deal with African Americans outside being such a huge watershed moment is because he ran as an American. He didn't run as a black guy or biracial or anything.
You're right.
He ran as an American. I think that's huge, and that's why he connected with so many different people.
Well, I hear you, Mark, and I am delighted at this development, and I appreciate the endorsement, the personal angle that you offered us in your own situation there. And just watching on television, my brother and his family were there in Grant Park at the victory celebration. And to see that full range of faces and the diversity that we saw there, that is the true America.
It was a contrast to McCain's.
Yeah, the lily white group there at the Biltmore in Phoenix
was kind of bad.
Very different.
I tell you what. Today was a great day.
I sure woke up with a spring in my step. Thank you, Mark.
Me too.
All right. John in Carmel Valley. Good to hear from you today, John. How are you?
Okay. I did not vote for Obama. I almost did. Earlier on, I thought I would if he really needed my vote.
Well, not in California. He was polling up by 23%, and I think he came pretty close to achieving that.
At first, I thought I was going to do something just in code to me. I was going to vote right in Alfred E. Newman's name, which would have told me none of the above in an emphatic, personal way. And then I thought, no, don't be stupid. Don't do some silly thing like that. So a friend of mine was going to vote for Ralph Nader. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that that's what I should do, because Nader's the one that's been saying what I think needs doing for ages. He doesn't have charisma or vote-garnering ability in the way I would like, but at least I voted for the person I thought represented what I'd like to see done. One last thing. I well recall listening on the BBC to the day of Tony Blair's victory, and it was as exciting and uplifting to the British people as this one is to so many Americans. Nobody thought then, I didn't especially, with all the compliments, there was just every microphone they stuck under a person was positive, and here was somebody, another John Kennedy. He was young, he was smart, he was energetic, he was going to change everything, and for a while it looked like that. Nobody would have guessed he would be the great big green light along with George Bush for going into Iraq.
Yeah.
And I am so tired of maneuvers like that and Pelosiism that vote for Ralph Nader was to say to Barack Obama, you're not going to have me on board until you do what we need to have done. All the charisma, all the Camelot abilities, and he has them at least as much as John Kennedy had, maybe more.
Maybe.
That's why I'm especially cautious, besides distrusting all of that veneer. I want the beef to come out, even though I'm not a beef eater much anymore. Everybody knows what I mean.
Well, John, I respect you as a rational thinker, and I respect the choice you made to vote for Nader. And I respect that you sent a message saying, Barack, you can't take me for granted. And I have done that in the past. This time, I didn't choose to do that. But I certainly, as I say, I respect the choice you made and the rationale behind it. Thanks a lot. I want to jump to Patrick in Monterey for the final word tonight. Welcome, Patrick. You're on the air.
I'm not going to say the infamous words you hate hearing, Peter.
Oh, good.
But I'm glad to talk to you.
Oh, good. I'm glad you called. Thank you. See, I can thank you for calling.
Yes, yes. I did take you up on your offer. I'm doing it now. President Obama. It does sound good.
And it feels good.
It feels good. And I like to basically pick up with the last caller on two points. I was considering Cynthia McKinney, who I think, you know, even more than Nader, probably, especially since I don't even think Nader has even weighed in on the 9/11 truth movement.
I don't believe he has.
She was a consideration, but I thought, you know what, I just want to say I voted for history. But my main point is, Congress is reconvening in a week or two.
Yeah.
We should press our representatives and senators to press for impeachment, because if Bush is under impeachment in his last months and days, he can't pardon anybody.
He's got to be impeached first. He would keep the pardon power until he's removed from office.
But, you know, I was told that...
Thank you, Patrick. I'm out of time, sorry, but thank you. Bye-bye. We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing, taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time. It's all done online. And it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation. That's 702-299-5789. Or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The cheers have died down, and Barack Obama turns to the hard job, hard choices, governing. CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds is covering.
Life is gradually changing for President-elect Barack Obama. Tomorrow he will receive the first daily presidential briefing. That is the briefing on intelligence and military matters, national security issues that the real president gets every day. It's a very important read, and Barack Obama will be getting that. Meanwhile, his transition team is hard at work here in Chicago, although eventually most of the heavy lifting and the appointments and so forth for his cabinet will be shifted to an office in Washington.
Because of the financial crisis, a new Treasury Secretary is expected to be among Mr. Obama's first choices. Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill are starting to flex their muscles. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
With Democratic ranks swollen by new gains all across the country in the House and Senate and a Democratic president-elect, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says their priorities are clear: helping the economy, fixing health care, reducing dependence on imported oil, and ending the war in Iraq.
We have an opportunity, we have a responsibility, and the American people should and will hold us accountable.
Pelosi says she'd like to pass another economic stimulus bill in a lame duck session even before Barack Obama becomes president, but that would take President Bush's agreement. Bob, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Wall Street provided a reminder today that all is not well in the economy. The Dow fell nearly 500 points. Analyst Hugh Johnson.
The news on the economic side of things, the news on the earnings side of things, which matters very, very much to investors, is not good, and the market reflects that by declining very sharply.
The Nasdaq lost 98 points. Like stocks, the price of crude oil shot up yesterday, then fell today, down more than $5 a barrel to $65.30. Declining violence in Iraq has made U.S. military commanders more comfortable. Officials say the American troop presence will be reduced to 14 combat brigades this month, 2 months earlier than originally planned. Author, director, and all-around creative genius Michael Crichton has died at 66. He'd been battling cancer. CBS News correspondent Richard Schlesinger has his story.
Previously on